www.TheMatthewAaronShow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook, or The Matthew Aaron Show, that is. Don't add me privately. I don't like you people. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. Let's see, what else do we have to promote? We're here at Detroit Style Coney Dog, 8873 West Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood, California. And I am joined today by my co-host, Lee Capreas. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Aide. Introduce yourself.
I'm Aide. I'm one of Matt's friends, and I'll be filling
in. Do you have a last name, Aide, or are you just going by Aide? Hey, Justin. How are you, buddy? Nice to meet you. And see what happened was Justin Willman walked in the room and Aide lost her train of thought.
I got so nervous, I just couldn't focus anymore.
Yeah, yeah, she's you've got her already. We're joined right away by Justin Willman, and I gotta tell you, this is funny because I was talking to your publicist Jeff, and I was telling him Aide's the one that got me into Cupcake Wars. And that's what introduced me to you.
She's to blame, huh?
Yeah,
it's all my fault.
She is to blame. My mother loves it, too, though. My mother's a big fan.
I'm glad. Say hi to your mother. What's your favorite flavor?
Yeah, what's your favorite Cupcake Wars episode? Do you got one?
My favorite episode? I like the Lucia Ball episode. That one was cute.
Was it cute?
Yeah, so cute.
That was a recent one, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick, raise his mic a little. What kind of chop shop is this?
How's it going, Nick?
Yeah, well, not well, obviously. Okay, so here's the thing that blows my mind. We're here with Justin Willman. He's the host of Cupcake Wars, but here's the thing. The guy is, from what I've been told, word on the street, a pretty fantastic magician, and not like bullshit at parties. Like, you get paid, like you're the real deal Holyfield when it comes to magic.
Didn't know we could say bullshit.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I'm way better magician than I am Cupcake Wars host.
Well, talk to me about that. Talk to me about, so that's your first love, magic.
That's my first love.
When did you start?
My main love. When I was 12.
Wow.
Yeah, to impress girls.
How'd that work out?
Not that well.
Really?
Well, not at first, you know, when you're an awkward kid, you know, you're not good at sports, you pick up a deck of cards, you know, and you walk around. I have a deck of cards somewhere on me.
You're always prepared. But, in case you go to Rock and Riley's down the block afterward to meet some women,
you got a
pack of cards. That must work now better than it did when you were 12, though.
Yeah,
be
way
honest.
Better, way better.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's drunk women.
When a 12-year-old flirts with you.
Right.
Can picture
but
that.
Drunk women love magic tricks in bars.
They love it. You can, if they're drunk enough, you can do the same trick over and over again. They don't even know. You know?
So, okay, you're 12, you're doing magic because you want to impress the ladies, and you're bored. So what was the process? Explain to me how you went about learning it.
Well, there was one magic shop in St. Louis where I'm from.
Okay.
That offered lessons. Now, the only thing was this magic shop was also like an adult bookstore. Okay? So I had to always have a parent with me when I'd go in there, and I'd learn my magic lessons, but it was like, you know, it was kind of uncomfortable because there's like inflatable dolls and dildos on the wall, and my mother's there. So I learned a lot about all types of magic during that early time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So what was your first trick?
Thanks, buddy.
When did you know you were actually going to be decent? What was your first trick?
Well, I think everyone's first trick was this one, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
The thumb trick.
For our listeners, I just did the thumb off trick, the leper thumb trick.
Yeah, what do you call it? It's called the leper thumb
trick. The leper thumb trick. I mean, I'm sure it's called like the trick your uncle does.
I was going to say, you make a Ben-Hur reference. Everyone else just calls it my asshole uncle trick.
Yeah, it's not to be discarded. It's a good trick. It's always with you, unless you don't have a thumb.
Okay, so you did the thumb trick. What was the toughest one, the first one you learned that was like took a lot of time?
The trick I did early on was this old Harry Anderson trick where he'd shove a needle.
Love Harry Anderson. Did you watch Cheers? And when he was on Cheers, though, as Harry the Hat,
he's the best, man.
Yeah.
So just his whole style and his persona and the fact that he could do a one-man show out of a suitcase and not need a bunch of illusions and stuff, it was very inspiring to me. So he'd do a trick where he would pull a hat pin and he'd stick it through his arm, okay? That requires, you know, and it's not really going through your arm, but it requires a little bit of setup. But I would do this trick in school, and it did not go over well because people thought I was really doing it. So I got involved. People didn't know if they helped me, and there's blood.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why was there blood?
Well, because
was there real blood?
Well, no, it's fake blood, but it looks pretty damn real.
Okay, I was gonna say.
Yeah.
So you're in high school, fake bleeding,
in a restaurant here. This is junior high, mind you, fake bleeding,
trying to
impress girls. Not the best way to do it.
Yeah, not a lot of dates coming your way
but
for
then,
that.
Then I bought a rabbit, and everything changed.
Really?
Yeah. Needle through rabbit.
Oh.
Rabbits are cute. Girls love bunnies.
Girls
you know?
Love bunnies, man.
Even when you were younger, they were really into the whole rabbit thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a great icebreaker. If you don't have anything to say, you just say, pet my bunny.
Now, wait, though.
I still say that. I don't even own a rabbit anymore.
Here's something I'm curious about, and you don't have to get too detailed. How do you go from the flirting with magic process to the actual, now you're dropping the magic bit going into the whole romancing process? When's the moment? What's the moment?
I don't think there's a moment.
Oh, man.
I think the magic keeps going on the whole time. You know?
Are you doing like that?
What's
magic
that
tricks
your
later?
Ear? It's a condom. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. See, that's that. Oh, I need to learn magic is what I need to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so then wait. So you're a magician. Did you go to college and stuff?
Yeah, I went to Emerson College in Boston.
Emerson, okay, yeah, it's a good school.
I went for broadcast journalism, thinking that I can't put all my eggs in the magic basket. I might as well maybe be a weatherman or something.
Oh, yeah. So instead of the one in a million magic basket, you went into the one in a billion weatherman basket. Yeah, that's good. That's good. And they kind of even out, and you got real lucky.
So now it's two in a million.
Now, how hard did you have to work, though? I joke and say you're really lucky, but how hard did you have to work to get where you are now, where you're hosting TV shows, and you could do your magic on the road and perform for tons of people?
I worked hard. Like, I really busted my ass for years doing magic on the road, 200-plus dates a year.
Wow.
You know, living out of a suitcase. My poor girlfriends would have to deal with that, and it was uncomfortable, but I worked hard. And then the whole TV hosting thing was really just being in the right place at the right time. Because somehow being a magician, you're kind of used to yapping and distracting people from what you're doing over here by talking over here. And that's what you're doing while TV hosting is you're just kind of keeping the ball rolling. So it lended itself well to transition.
So how did the opportunity come along for the TV hosting? What was the right place, right time?
I was flying back from a college show in Maine when my hosting agent said, hey, do you want to come read to audition a cupcake show? And I was like, yes. That's exactly what I
want
to do.
Now, this was the first cupcake show, kind of, right?
It was.
So, did they have a Ace of Cakes before then, or
I think the Ace of Cakes was around.
Okay, but this was like competitive. This was like,
this was
kind of like a new thing. So, what did you think when they pitched you this idea that they're going to have four people on doing cupcakes for charity events or hosting events, and there's going to be three judges? And
I think we all thought this will not last. This will not go anywhere. Maybe a couple episodes.
Yeah.
But now we're doing like season five.
Yeah, you guys are doing okay.
We're doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing all right.
I'm all for it. It's because the cupcake craze was going crazy, and it's so competitive. It's kind of an ironic thing that something as cute and innocent as a cupcake, people can be so cutthroat about it. Everyone has their favorites, and everyone, you know, Sprinkles fans or Magnolia fans or whatever they are.
Yeah.
So there's so much drama there, and drama makes good television.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, this is how well you're doing. Does anyone ever come up to you and go, ugh, every time I turn on Food Network, it's you or Guy Fieri? That's it. It's like no joke. Last week, I watch Food Network all the time.
Yeah.
Last week, there's like 5 hours of Guy, and then there's like 3 hours of you.
Wow.
And I'm like, do they have a third show?
Yeah,
you are all over that network.
I don't think
I don't think they do get sick of it because they wouldn't be playing 3 hours of
it. I guess you're right. They haven't edited me out yet.
No. No, I'm like, man, these cupcake wars are popular.
Yeah. But Guy's got like several shows. So.
Yeah.
The Guy Network.
Yeah, he's a little overboard. Yeah. Someone's got to calm him down.
That guy.
He is a tall glass of cocaine, that guy. Yeah. Okay, so explain to me. So Cupcake Wars, you film a pilot for it? How does this process go?
Yeah, so we did a pilot for it. We did, it was the Alma Awards episode. I don't know if you, how many times you watched it.
So
we,
that would be the first one.
We shot this in a tent at UCLA, and it was like the Latino Awards, and it went really well. They still air that pilot, but then they picked up 8 episodes, which went well. We didn't think it would go any further than that. Then they picked up 13, and then another 13, and then 26, and then... Now, there's a lot of cupcakes out there.
Now, are you thinking of doing anything else with Food Network? Do you have, like, a production set up with them?
Yeah, I'm kind of, because I also host Halloween Wars.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of there, you know, when it comes to candy, cake, sweet stuff, the guy that they have
not
hosting.
To be insulting, you're their Seacrest.
I'm their Seacrest.
Yeah.
I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, you are to Food Network what he is to the E! Network.
I'm the Seacrest of icing.
You know what, though? That's not a bad gig, and you keep your dignity doing it with food instead of entertainment, because no one likes a gossip. A food guy. Everyone's going to love you.
Yeah. I mean, if I got a gig on E, it would just be totally acting like I cared about that stuff.
I was over at the Grove the other day, and they film Extra there now.
Yeah.
I like Mario Lopez. Whatever. He's a good dude, I guess. Whatever. Sure. But, like, oh, it's just awful. I'd kill myself if I had that job.
Well, it's every day they have to make up something.
You have to make up that you care about RuPaul.
That you, exactly.
Good for Ru. I mean,
thank you for Wikipedia. I'm sure Mario is every night. He's like, oh, my God, what do I have to know?
Well, yeah, and that's why on this show what we've done from day one is I've told Pat I only want people I know and like. Like, I have to, like a person for them to come on.
Wow.
So we turned down a bunch of people.
That makes me extra honored. I'm thank you.
Yeah. Like, this wasn't just like we had a free slot so you could squeeze in. We wanted you.
So I owe it to you for turning them on.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that is true. Hey, do you have any Cupcake War stuff before we get to the magic stuff?
Like,
I just want to know about the drama on the show.
Drama?
Is there drama?
There's drama.
Like backstage stuff?
Is
there stuff that doesn't make the show?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, the judges tend to ramble on a lot longer than you end up seeing.
Do they ever bicker?
They totally bicker.
Yeah.
They totally bicker. Florian especially, you know, he's very opinionated.
I like when you guys put the subtitles in for Florian.
Even though he's speaking English.
I can understand him. I don't know what Matt was saying. You can't understand a word he's saying.
Okay, if I'm the only crazy one, why are there subtitles?
Well, I did take French class in high school, so that kind of could help.
That's it. Was your teacher French?
Yeah, she was.
So you have experience. Yeah.
So there's a little bickering and stuff. What doesn't make the show? Was there any like moment where it was just too much for the show? It would they didn't want any like bad press or anything.
Really.
Any kind of fighting.
Whenever there is fighting or tears, that's what they love.
Yeah, do they?
That's
yeah.
What makes the viewers kind of hang on the edge of their seats.
That's true. I do like seeing when the two teams are real competitive. Like, I can't remember the exact episode, but there was this one guy and he was a pompous ass.
Yes.
And he kept ripping on these women, and like they were like ripping on him, and I'm like,
was
that's great.
Like Jolly Green Giant,
really tall.
Dude.
Yeah. He was a dick.
He loves trash talking.
Yeah,
it's always great, but when you're the first to go home and you're the trash talker, it's very embarrassing.
All right, now in all honesty, why do lesbians love cupcakes so much?
Wow,
have you figured it out working on the show? What is with lesbians and baking? They love
tattooed
it.
Tattooed lesbian bakers. Are
tattoos, too,
tattoos
yeah.
Especially.
What is up?
I don't know. It's a good question. I wonder what they were all doing before the cupcake craze. What was their previous occupation?
I don't know. I'm really...
It had to have been somewhere. What was an industry that died out?
You never thought about that?
I never thought about that.
You've
got weird.
Tattoos.
I'm not a lesbian. Is
that
no, what you're
I didn't. I was not implying that.
Whoa.
See how smoothly I figured that one out?
Look... It just so happens every time I watch Cupcake Wars, I go, more lesbians.
You know, every time I watch The Carpenters, I want to know, do the Carpenters on the show ever go home with any of the winners, any of those girls?
Because she thinks the Carpenters are hot.
You want their phone number?
No, I mean, I'm not really saying that, but...
He's offering the phone number.
They're both happily married.
Oh.
Yeah. But the
ladies love the girls love them. I know.
Right.
You can tell when they walk out on set, all the girls are like, ooh.
Because I did say to Adrian last week, I said, Aid... These aren't what real carpenters look like.
Oh, no, they're
there
too
needs
hot.
To be fat guys in, you know, overalls.
They're wearing flannels,
and
they always look super, like, little enough, like, mess just to make it sexy.
They're like a Bob Vila boy band. You're saying that's not what it's really like?
Yeah, that's what it needs to be, a Bob Vila boy band. I like that.
Wait, trust me, you wouldn't want a big, crazy-looking carpenter coming out on a cupcake
show.
Yeah, maybe on TV not so much, but I just don't buy it. I think they just chose a couple hot guys and said, you're carpenters.
But they're good, though.
Are they?
Legit. They're really good.
I mean, they only have, what, like 2 hours?
2 hours.
Is it really 2 hours?
It really is 2 hours.
They don't get any, like, pregame or anything.
Not that I know of.
No?
I don't think so, no.
So they basically just know the idea of the event,
and
that's all they can do.
They have supplies and stuff, you know, ready for that theme. So, if you know,
now,
depending on
what... Now, does Food Network supply them with the supplies, or do the carpenters have to go out and get what they want? Or
I think maybe it's a mix of the two. Like, I know for all the little decorations and stuff, they have a nice pantry of... appropriate things that people can choose from.
See, that's your spinoff. They should be showing what the carpenters have to do with the limited equipment they have.
I agree. I think the carpenters should be their own show.
Yeah.
Carpenters.
Yeah.
Not the cupcake carpenters.
Not the singing one.
You won't want to kill yourself with these carpenters. No. I got to tell you, this show just interests me, though, to like no end. You get like crazy, crazy guests on, like interesting events that you guys do things for. Do you eat a lot of the cupcakes?
I eat every single one.
That'd be the best part of the show.
Every single one.
Now, how do you feel, though? Do you ever get, like, sick from eating all the cupcakes?
Horrible.
Has Jeff gone with you over to Cupcake Wars?
He's come by.
I can see Jeff doing about a six-pack.
Yeah, he helps share the burden. Because at the end of the day, you got all these extra cupcakes that you got to get and take somewhere.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's why. What about the ones that are, like, really shitty, though?
I actually am always fascinated to find out when they rip them apart, when the judges say they're horrible, I want to know what.
So do you try them?
How can you tell? Yeah, how can you?
Sometimes you can. Like, some dude tried to put baked salmon in a cupcake with mayonnaise on it.
I saw the one that was last week or 2 weeks ago with the Super Bowl theme, you know, when they had the tailgating.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they're putting like hot dogs,
and
nacho cheese.
Yeah.
And were those actually good?
They're actually good. Cheetos. They put like.
What was the good one? What was the good one from that episode that you liked?
I like
the
savory cupcake. The hot dog one is.
But did the sweet like kill the hot dog? Did it make it kind of like overload?
If you're not prepared, like if you're just gonna pick up a cupcake like that and you don't know what it is, it's gonna turn you off. But if you're geared up for it and you're like, all right, tailgate, I want to eat a hot dog, you're like, this is the best it could be.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So you moved out here then at what point?
In 2002.
Okay.
After college in Boston.
Okay. So
from
you
St. Louis to Boston.
Okay.
To here.
So how was that like at the beginning when you came out here? Like, just kind of, did you have money put aside? Did you have to get some jobs?
Kids' birthday parties.
Wow.
I was a kid's
for the magic.
Birthday party magician. Yeah, I used to go by the name Justin Credible.
Yeah, I saw Justin Credible.
Yeah. I used to do kids' birthday parties, and it was quite a lucrative business. I mean, it took a while to build up.
Were some of the kids mad you weren't the wrestler when you showed up?
Occasionally, yes. They're like, there's a wrestler named Justin Credible. I'm like, quiet. Shut up. Body slam you.
He's ruined a kid's birthday.
4-year-old, yeah.
So what is the difference between doing a magic show for kids and a magic show for adults? Like, when you go to a kid's party, what do you do differently that you don't do when you're in Vegas?
Doing a show for kids is like performing for drunk adults. It's a very similar mentality. They will say what they want. They're very honest. It's quite good experience doing shows for kids because you can't just do crap. Like, they'll tell you it's crappy. But these days, you can kind of get away with doing something mediocre. And adults will be like, oh, very nice. They'll be very polite.
Yeah.
And lots of fart jokes.
Yeah. Well, I just, real quick, I want to put out one plug right away. Yeah. Well, first, you got Willman.com.
I do. Thank you.
But also, you're at the Nerdist Theater, and that's going to be, it's in the back of Meltdown Comics, right?
Yes.
And that's 7522 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Tickets are $8 in advance, 10 at the door. And what date is that? That's on the 14th.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So either bring a date or meet one there or screw date.
All right, let's be honest.
Yeah.
How many lonely guys are going to be at this event? Who are just like, I couldn't get laid.
Yeah,
so magic.
Let's go to the comic book store.
Maybe he can make a hot single woman appear for me.
Yeah, I would love for a future couple to
I'm gonna be there. Here's the deal.
Yes.
Steve Terrell has a show. He's a great jazz singer. He's a producer. He's doing one at Catalina, but he's gonna be there for 10 days. So what I say to people is, go when I go, like early next week, and then do the Valentine's Day at Meltdown Comics.
I love it.
Because, you know, we all hate Valentine's Day secretly, and nothing spits in the face of Valentine's Day more than spending it in the back of a comic book store.
I feel like
at
if
a
you're
theater,
a girl
you know?
Alone on Valentine's Day, it's worse than being alone if you're a guy.
Yeah?
I think so.
I think so, too.
I do not have a Valentine this year.
Justin, are you single?
I'm not single.
Well, there that's...
But
sorry.
I have single friends.
You
have single
friends? Yes, you can come meet them.
The hot girl might be at the magic show.
There you go.
See,
I'm tricking you out, and let's talk about that. Tricked out. Tell me about it.
Tricked out.
Yeah. You like that segue?
You're good.
I told her I'd trick her out. Okay, let's... Come on now.
Well, after doing these shows for... Like I was telling you, I was busting my ass for years on the road.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I kind of got a little... You know, pardon the pun here, like tricked out, over just being like a constant trick machine. So I created a show that's a little bit of a balance of the magic and the comedy, but kind of just doesn't take itself too seriously. So you see so many magicians who are so self-reverent and, you know, holier than thou and mysterious. So I wanted the show to be kind of one that's a little bit over that. tongue-in-cheek and respect the intelligence of the audience.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I go for with it.
That's good. That's good. So do you do some comedy, too, though?
I like to think
you're
it's a funny,
funny guy.
Show.
You do you do the whole deal.
Do the shtick, yeah.
Now, have you ever thought of doing, like, Amazing Jonathan kind of like? So it's a little more magic than it is comedy. It's like it's got elements of like what Amazing Jonathan does.
I love Jonathan.
He's great.
What's great about Jonathan is he doesn't even have to have it pay off with the trick. It's just
so
funny and
ridiculous.
Of
his tricks purposely fail and they're great.
They're great.
They're great when they fail.
Well, that's the best. That's the true sign of an entertainer is when you don't have to actually, you know, do magic. You have something pay off. So I like the fact that my show sometimes it could be a 10-minute piece where one thing happens, it's magical, but it's still entertaining.
Yeah. Well, I did stand up for years before I started doing this show. And you have to prepare a whole act. Now, do you have multiple acts prepared? Do you have, like, just one act? How does it work?
Well, I've got, like, a full 90-minute show that when I go on tour and I do my theaters, I do that show. So, like, what I do at Meltdown is I'll some of the hosts of the show as well. So I'll tailor it down and I'll handpick bits. And I'll do about 30 minutes interspersed throughout the show.
Wow.
So I have new stuff that I'm always rotating in. And then Meltdown's a good space to play and see a work in progress. You know?
Okay. So what was your go-to? Because Jeff was telling me you performed for President Obama.
I did.
So this is a true story.
Yeah.
All right. You performed for President Obama. What was your go-to? How do you decide what act to use? How much time did you have? How did this go?
25-minute show.
How were you invited to do it, first of all?
So this girl who grew up watching me perform in St. Louis is now an intern at the White House. She's in college. Hooked it up. You never
Small
know
world.
Where like,
Small
the
world.
Awesome lead will come from. And I was trying to put together my 20-minute show, but it was on Halloween. It was a Halloween show. So I do this trick where I normally float this. I have a mahogany table that I make levitate
wow.
and float. It's pretty cool. But I put a new spin on it, so I told all the kids in the audience that this is a table that belonged to William Henry Harrison, the first president to die in the White House. I said this is his nightstand. I had a picture of him on it, okay?
Yeah.
And I made that table float, and people were freaking out. I float it, and everyone's kind of silent.
Now,
I'm
who's
like,
there other than Obama? Anyone else?
Like
his family?
Family?
Is his family
staff,
there?
Military family.
Oh,
it was
that's
about
awesome.
100 people. It was pretty casual.
Yeah.
He was about 10 feet away.
So there's kids, and you're doing ghost tricks.
I'm doing ghost tricks.
That's really...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first lady heckled me. I was floating the table. I was like, you guys act like this is normal. She's like, because we're freaking out. It is kind of a spooky trick.
Oh, man, that's wild.
Yeah.
Is that stuff we can expect over at the Nerdist Theater?
Yeah. 100%. But now you know it's not really William Henry Harrison's table.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
now
mine.
You're not a very good magician. You just let the secrets out. What else goes on at the Nerdist Theater? Tell me about this theater, because this is new to me.
Yeah, so...
I just moved here,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, Chris Hardwick, who Nerdist is, basically commandeered the space, and his people pack the place. Every night they have the Meltdown, which is their comedy show. They do a comedy show every Wednesday night.
Yeah.
But then they've got, they've got improv, they've got live music, all very, like, niche kind of nerdy fascinations, as in magic being one of them. And they've created a great program. Every night they have something different. Dan Harmon does
that. Yeah, Dan Harmon, the creator of Community.
You know? So all these people, they get some great... I mean, the Wednesday Night Meltdown show, they get Margaret Cho in there, Aziz Ansari, get great comics to pop in because it's a cool space.
That's
kind
awesome.
Of a new alternative to UCB.
You know, Chris is... I got to give him a lot of credit, man, because he went from being just... You and him have a little bit in common, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
I mean, he hosted Singled Out, and he's just this guy, and you didn't really know a lot about him. And then he started his podcasting, and you kind of learned a lot, and he was on G4 a lot, and he kind of learned about Chris and realized there was more behind him than a host of a bad dating show with Jenny McCarthy.
Right.
And you got to be really proud of the guy for what he's doing, man.
Totally.
Good for him.
He's the real deal, man. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I've gotten lunch with him a couple times.
That's
very
great.
Mentoring and offers great advice.
That's great.
Yeah. I
That's
mean, just
great.
Look what he did by getting specific, saying, you know what, I don't want to just be the host of all this random stuff. I want to... I'll host stuff that I actually care about.
Yeah.
And he's created his own industry.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I think that he commandeered an area in the back of a comic book store is just awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a good, it's a perfect, it's a very fitting home.
Oh,
that. And the good thing is that it, they didn't make it look like it's not what it is. Like,
right.
It still looks like you're in the back of a comic book store. There's no velvety curtains. There's no special fancy lighting. Like, it's raw.
Are people playing Magic the Gathering at a table in a corner?
I'm sure there must be a handful of people every week, every month who come see me and totally think it's a different kind of show.
Oh.
They bring their trading cards and they're wanting to, you know, melt down their Magic cards.
Hey, do you like Magic?
No. Like the card game?
No, not the card game. Like the
eggs? You're talking about the card game?
No, she doesn't play Magic the Gathering, no. Do you like guys that play Magic the Gathering?
No.
I guess that's out.
Wow.
Justin,
sorry.
You don't play Magic the Gathering, do you?
I don't
play
Magic the Gathering.
All right. Okay.
I do a Magic Gathering.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
comics.
Yeah, that's okay.
Kinda.
So
the
what?
Better than playing a card game.
So, Aide, as a lady who would, as a attractive female who would go to Justin's show, what would you expect from him? What would you want to see from him as a magician?
I'm listening.
I don't know. Like, something like that you haven't seen a magician do before, like a new.
Do you have
unique,
any tricks
like
that
own,
are pretty
signature.
Unique to you?
Yeah, I mean, you mean something just weird, something you would never expect.
Yeah, something that you would never expect.
See that?
Yeah.
Okay. 50 cent euro piece.
All right, he
just
put a 50 cent euro on the table.
So Aide wants to see something that she wouldn't expect, something really weird, okay? And I'm here to deliver something weird. Watch. Watch the coin. I'm going to make the coin vanish.
It's
going to
hit me in the eye.
Really weird way.
It's going to be
it?
Three Stooges right in my eye.
Aide, say go. Yeah. Say go.
Go.
Now that was weird.
See, that was pretty weird. It's a little
bit
of hand.
I had a baby arm.
I saw that.
Not that kind of baby arm. But a baby arm that came out and grabbed me.
That is
that's
that's kind of creepy.
Yeah,
I mean, yes, impressive.
I did not expect that.
By the way, as a guy, this is totally off topic, but Justin is a hip young man like myself. I'm 28. How old are you? Do you mind?
31.
31. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're right there.
Yeah.
Okay. We're watching Three Stooges last night, which we do every
classic.
Night. Okay, classic. Women don't get Three Stooges. She thinks it's the stupidest.
Okay. It's supposed to be. You said it was supposed to be stupid, funny.
It's supposed to be.
And it was. It was stupid.
Oh,
okay. So
never
I laughed.
It before?
She never seen
I
it.
I have when I was little, like at my grandma's house, but I've never. I don't. I just don't. I never. When I'm with my friends, I don't think. Oh, hey, let's watch something. Let's watch the Three Stooges. Like that's not usually the first thing that comes to mind.
I looked at my roommate and I go, "We have women over at the house, and we put on Three Stooges."
Was Shemp there? No.
No.
No. Okay.
No, this was mid-40s Stooges.
I mean, I laughed. It's not. I'm not saying it wasn't funny. I mean, it was.
One of them was really a weird episode for them. One of them's a weird short, but there were some funny ones, and she was just like, this is so stupid.
Is it a guy thing?
I think it is.
I think, yeah.
I think it's really a guy thing.
Yeah,
kind of roughhousing, cranking guy.
Like, if you like the Farrelly Brother movies, you'll like The Stooges.
Yeah, I love
like Kingpin and Dumb and Dumber, and yeah, just, oh,
but I bet you like those things, right?
She thought Larry was hot.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I love that perm and the...
Jufro going.
Yeah.
So sexy.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Larry
Crusty
Fine.
The clown hair he's got.
So, yeah, what do you do to relax and wind down? I watch The Stooges at night. What's your, like, relaxed time like?
Man, American Pickers is kind of my favorite.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
It's on the History Channel. It's about these two dudes who own an antique shop, but they've got to stock their shop, so they drive around the country finding people who just have, like, hordes of cool Americana, and they buy it off of them.
Have you been to the shop, the
no,
real shop?
No, it's in Iowa, but I love to fill my house
no
with
one
weird,
goes to
weird
Iowa.
Stuff, like old vintage crap, magic things.
What old vintage crap do you have?
Let's see, I've got a, it's called a Phoratic Vibrator, wait for it. It's an Art Deco thing that my dad found, and it, I guess in the 30s, it was like considered a medical device, where you'd strap this one electrode to your wrist, and then you'd have this little electrode probe that you would apply to areas where you had pain in your body and was supposed to ease the pain.
Have you ever used it?
No. It just looks cool.
Are you afraid because it's so old, if you tried it, it would shorten, like electrocute you?
I don't like the fact that it's called a Phoratic Vibrator. It just sounds...
Yeah, they couldn't come up with a worse name for that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there's nothing good about that name. No.
But I love weird, just kind of architectural pieces. That was very intriguing to me.
So give me a normal Monday through Friday day for Justin Willman. What happens? Go from the morning to night.
Wow. Well, rarely is 1 week consistent to the last. But
yeah, that's
this
true.
Week, I'll tell you, it was kind of exciting. So Nerdist is having its own YouTube channel coming on April. YouTube's doing all these branded
shows,
creating content, so like compete with television, basically. So they gave me a show on the Nerdist channel called Justin Willman's Magic Meltdown.
Congratulations.
So, well, I'm excited about it just because it'll be my first chance to actually put out a piece of magic content, you know, for the web and hopefully then translate into a TV show of what that unique brand of magic is that I do, you know. We've seen David Blaine do his brand of magic. We've seen Chris Angel. So this is my chance to finally, like, turn it on its head, you know.
Yeah.
I like to think that we're taking street magic and repaving it, you know what I mean? So we've been shooting we shot all week. We did some cool, crazy stuff. We did a thing at Venice Beach on Monday where I found a blonde girl and a brunette girl. We kind of gathered a crowd around, and we cut a lock of hair out of the blonde girl. She did not know I was going to do this, so I was lucky that she didn't get getting smacked. And I took this lock of blonde hair, and I rubbed it into the brunette girl's hair, and it was now her hair. Okay. Might have been the coolest trick I think I'd ever done, and it actually worked out really great.
So creepy.
It's going to be cool. So you get to see
that. That's impressive, but I'd be very angry if you cut off some of my hair.
Well, you have beautiful hair.
Yeah, what does this girl do?
What if I put a big thick lock of blonde in there?
Yeah, what
is... Well, I used to have blonde hair. I actually just dyed it.
So you'd be okay. You'd be fierce.
What did this girl say after you cut off her hair? And then what did the other girl say that you now added hair?
Kind of freaking out.
Did you take the blonde back out of the brown?
No, I left it in.
And she was okay with that?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had to leave it in.
Well, you were in Venice Beach. So
that was...
They didn't give a crap. Yeah. They were very excited.
All right, so then what do you do for, like, lunch, dinner? What's your places out here?
Man, well, I'm not a vegan, but I go to this place called Cafe Gratitude that my friends own in Larchmont, and it's just pretty delicious.
Okay.
It counteracts my hot dog and cupcake diet quite well.
Yeah?
To make me feel healthy.
Have you had Coney Dog?
I haven't, and I can't
wait
to.
You haven't been to this place?
No.
Oh. And you like hot dogs?
Yeah.
You're missing out.
What do I need to do?
You want Coney? You want to go with the Coney?
Good beginner dog.
I gotta tell you too. I hear the vegan dog's great. I don't need it.
They have a vegan dog for real?
Yeah, but now that I've been dieting and vegan chili.
Wow.
And now that I've been dieting, and what's crazy is Mike Binder came up with the recipes himself.
Really?
Like, he's fucking crazy, man. But I usually get, now that I'm dieting, I get a turkey dog, which is great, with vegan chili. And it's outstanding. And I thought I'd hate it.
Wow.
And Rod Lurie turned me on to it. It's great. But I'd go with a Coney and a Faygo.
Okay. And a Faygo? What's a Faygo?
Faygo is like a one of those cream sodas, but they're flavored.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're into that.
You back them up on this?
Yeah. Back them up on the Faygo.
I like the Rock and Rye Faygo.
I'm in it.
Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff. And, Sandler owns this place. Mike Binder's the primary owner, and Sandler and Tim Allen and Sam Raimi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a motley crew.
So, yeah, you get a little nerd with Sam Raimi.
Like,
and
yeah.
You get funny with Tim and Adam, and then you get crazy with Mike.
It's perfect. The four horsemen of dogs.
Yeah, yeah, no. You should... let me know how the food is.
I will.
Steve Terrell was on Wednesday, and he had like four plates of food like while we were doing the show.
Wow.
Yeah, he wouldn't stop eating.
So I can eat and talk?
You could. Oh, my mother's calling in. Do you want to talk to my mother?
Talk to your mother. Where does she live?
Chicago. Hello, Ma.
Hello.
Knew it was you.
Well, obviously. How many callers do you have?
I have plenty of callers that I don't pick up for.
Oh, okay. Well, I was calling to first of all to say hi to Aid.
Hi.
Hi. And second of all, Aid, is he really dieting?
Matt, yeah, he actually is.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it myself, but he's actually been keeping to it. He's been keeping to it. He's been doing good.
I couldn't believe it.
Okay.
I'm glad it's unbelievable.
I'm usually the one kind of making him go off his diet, though. Every time I come up here to visit, I kind of make
him
eat
more. Yeah, she eats 1,000 times worse than I do. I don't know
well,
how you stay so thin. She eats way worse than I do.
Okay. And I just want to know from Justin, when I come out there, do I really, really, really need to go to Sprinkles?
Yeah.
Is that like the best cupcake?
You know there's a Sprinkles in Chicago.
Yeah, Ma, there's sprinkles in Chicago. I've told you this.
I don't care about Chicago. I'm coming to L.A.
Yeah. Okay, yes, this is going to be a field trip. When you come here, you go to the Beverly Hills Sprinkles.
Yeah.
It's okay. You've got to do it. They're so good. They do a chocolate peanut butter cupcake.
My Ma just wants to be a guest judge on Cupcake Wars, and she's not
going to... I don't want to be a guest judge on Cupcake Wars.
You don't want to eat all the cupcakes, Ma?
Oh, God, no. I gained 20 pounds. I don't need to do that as I'm sitting here eating M&M's. No.
I don't blame you.
No. I would never be a decent judge.
Is Sprinkles the best out here? Is that number one?
Well, I think so. I love Sprinkles. But honestly, when we're not shooting Cupcake Wars, I don't eat cupcakes that much. So I'm not an expert. I love candy.
So does she bring cupcakes to you guys?
She sure as heck does. We actually did a shoot at Sprinkles the other day where I did a card trick outside the store and someone's card. We couldn't find it, and we went in and they picked the cupcake, chopped it in half, and inside was their card.
Oh.
So Sprinkles is a good thing.
Yeah, I did watch the Super Bowl one the other day. I was getting a little nauseous thinking about hot dogs in a cupcake. That wasn't quite doing it for me.
Wow. Well, I let Matt know there.
Justin said they were good.
It was pretty good.
Yes, I'm on the air. Your sister says hi.
Oh, okay. Say hi to her.
And so does Marcus.
Oh, okay. Say hi to Marcus. Okay.
How's Pepper?
Yeah, how's Pepper?
Oh, I don't know how Pepper is. You have to ask Sarah about that.
How's Marley, my dog?
Marley's fine. Oh. She's a little jealous of the baby.
Carmella?
My cat. Carmella is indifferent towards the baby.
Yeah, she's planning some kind of heist.
Yeah, she's doing something. I don't know.
Yeah, how's the baby, I guess? Justin cares about how's Liam.
Three dogs. How's the baby?
Your nephew was fine. He's absolutely beautiful. Everybody says he looks like Daddy.
He kind of has a fat head.
Oh, all babies have
fat. No, he doesn't.
All right. Well, my opinion. It's my opinion.
Well, that was just the first picture I sent you. I sent you a picture right after he had
when you
popped out.
Oh, when you sent me the head one, I thought there was something wrong.
No. That was the first picture.
I knew the dad was screwed up, but I didn't know he was an alien.
No. No, totally not. I will bring, when I come out, I will bring you better pictures and I'll bring my camera and stuff.
Are you doing it? Now, do you have any shows the 21st through the 25th so my mother could come see your magic?
February?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let me check. I don't think so.
Oh, nope. Man.
We do it once a month. Maybe we have to set up a private show.
I want to see Justin's magic.
Well, his sister's trying to be a guest co-host for his radio show, so maybe stop into Coney Dogs when we're there.
We do a Coney
Dog. I'm actually dying to see this place.
So we'll see what place? Coney?
Coney Dog.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay, what are you going to see? What are you dying to see?
I don't know. I want to know where you're hanging out at.
Wherever they'll take me.
that's for sure.
I told Mike he has to have lunch with you when you're in town, and I think he rolled his eyes. Don't tell him.
Oh, well, he never answered my Facebook message either.
Well, why would he answer your Facebook message? I told him you're like, why are you friends with Mike Binder on Facebook, Ma?
Yes, I'm friends
with
Mike Binder on Facebook.
What are you bothering my friends for?
It came up as a friend thing for
Steph,
me.
Steph, you don't have Facebook, do you?
No. Me?
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook.
Oh, no. Get off.
But
my Ma will add you as a friend.
I promise not to add Justin, okay?
Why won't you add him? Oh, now you don't want to add. Why wouldn't you add him?
Because now you're being a shithead towards me.
There you go. Spoken like a classic mom.
All right. Well, I got some restaurants picked out and some cupcake joints. We'll go to something. I don't know.
Okay. Your sister wants to go down Rodeo Drive.
Why?
Because we want to be able to say we were at Rodeo Drive and went shopping.
What did I tell you? Rent a car. I have a life. You guys go to Rodeo Drive and do your...
Oh, Matthew, please. Your life consists of watching TV, hanging around Coney Dogs, doing your show once every other day, and then bitching about it the rest of the time. What is this life that you supposedly have? Aid, am I right?
No.
I don't want to get involved.
Because it's not true. That is flat out not true. Bye, Ma.
She started out so sweet. Yeah,
that's how it always goes.
I have to say, that's home at Matt's house. Yeah.
Ma, are you leaving now? Can I hang up on you?
Yeah, you can hang up on me in 2 seconds. So, wait, Ian Mackenzie Jeffers is going to be on.
Ian Jeffers.
Ian Jeffers.
Yeah, Ian, Ma.
Ian.
Yeah, he's coming on next in like 15 minutes to talk about the gray.
He's going to have to call back.
Can I call back? Or are you going to be mad at me?
You can call back. Actually, Ian just walked in. Yes.
Okay, you know, worth moving here.
You know, Ma, I just had that meeting at Comedy Central last week. I've been writing. I got two scripts in the can here.
Okay, well, because you were pointing out the fact that you and Justin were so much alike, but he's got a paying gig.
He's also been out here since 2002. I think you should calm down.
But yeah, you're doing well so far.
I'll teach him the baby hand trick.
Yeah.
Okay, teach him the baby hand. Teach him some magic tricks.
I can't do children's part.
I will go now. I will probably call back after I listen to Ian and see what he has to say.
Okay, bye, Ma.
Goodbye, dear. I love you. Nice talking to you, Justin.
Bye,
Aide.
Bye.
I really can't let her call in anymore.
Wow.
And, like, I have to take her call because, like, I ignore a bunch of calls on my screen, but I know my mother's number.
She's
and, like,
Skyping in? Is that what she's doing?
Yeah. And, like, I know her number, so I know, like,
it's pretty cool that my mother doesn't even know how to use it. She can't even text.
I don't know who taught her. I'm really pissed about it.
Probably Steph.
So, she calls in.
No,
nice
she
thing?
Calls in whenever she likes a guest. And then, you know, she called Michael Ian Black, and they aren't like bullshitting for 10 minutes and I'm not getting the word in. She like hijacks my show.
Yeah, but they love it. It's kind of nice.
Do they?
It just kind of like the whole
I don't think Ted McGinley liked it when he was on and I go, "Hey Ma, Ted McGinley's on. Don't you think he's great?" And she goes, "He's all right." And he's sitting right there.
Well,
I go, "You don't
it.
Think he's good looking?" And she goes, "He's okay."
Not blowing smoke up people's asses.
I think Ted wanted a little smoke up the bum.
Straight shooter.
All right, well, let's plug this again here.
Yes.
Justin Willman's Magic Meltdown, Tuesday, February 14th. It's at 8 p.m. at the Nerdist Theater, which is in the back of Meltdown Comics.
Yep, come sit next to 8.
Yes, $8 for an advance ticket, $10 if you... See, here's the thing, people. Why wouldn't you buy your ticket now? $8. You show up at the door, it's 10.
Yeah.
Then you don't get that $2 for the Juju Bees or whatever you can get at the comic book
they
store.
They got good Juju Bees. And it's quite a lineup. We've got another magician on the show, Joel Ward, a crazy comedian, Chipper Lowell, Eliza Schlesinger, a great comedian. It's going to be fun.
Oh, Abe wanted to know about this.
Yeah.
Tell me about
what's
this Jason Mraz.
Yeah.
I am a Mraz fan, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you want to know about
him? Well, I didn't want to know anything. We were just reading up on before you came on the show, and I was like, oh, he's worked with Jason Mraz. And Matt's like, oh, good for him. Matt's not a fan.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
He's a good guy. He's a buddy of mine.
I never said I'm not a fan.
I'm not into that music so much.
Yeah, so you're not a fan.
And there's nothing
and
wrong
I'm
with
not
that.
A fan of your 80-year-old woman music, and I don't complain.
What does he listen to?
Etta James' 80-year-old woman music? Well,
right. You're not an Etta James fan?
Frank Sinatra,
Dean
Martin.
Okay, you've never listened to Frank Sinatra when I'm in the car with you. It's always like Celine Dion.
Oh,
or like
bullshit.
Cher. Okay, no.
You're calling me out on this show as a Cher listener? I'm never going to get laid again. Oh, no.
Sorry.
His heart will go on, everybody. Wow. Well, Mraz, super cool guy. Big Magic fan. I got to go on tour with him and make him appear every night. Like, it was pretty badass.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I don't care now. I'm not getting laid ever again because of that. Yeah. Any chick that listens to the show is going to be like, listens to Cher in the car.
There's going to be some Cher fans out there eager for a
little.
Yeah,
you know,
like Cher. That's about it. Oh.
Sorry. Shouldn't have blasted it while we're driving down Santa Monica Boulevard.
Wow. Well,
I don't think
can,
I did.
You definitely
I think
okay.
that was James Ingram or something.
No,
I was,
no.
You should fling. You can fling back some unflattering.
Justin, do you have any like music that people would think is a guilty pleasure or no good? Who do you listen to that people give you shit about?
Let me think here. I like to listen to this guy Martin Sexton, who he's like a singer-songwriter, but he has a lot of songs where he yodels. So when I play this, people are like, what the hell is this?
You rather listen to that going voice. Down Santa Monica Boulevard?
So, yeah,
yodel?
I like yodel.
A yodeler?
He yodels.
You want
to
hear a yodeler?
Honestly, it's probably better than what you listen to now.
Oh, wow.
To be completely honest. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
Celine Dion, not that I'm defending this, has sold more albums than any other woman on the planet.
When?
What do you mean when?
When was that? How long ago?
Ongoing.
How about her whole career? Ongoing. She's not
she
dead.
I don't listen to her. I don't
She's
care.
Got a new show at Caesar's Palace right now. I don't know. I know way too much about that. We're going to stop talking about Celine Dion.
Yeah, and you're just making it worse for yourself.
Tell us more about Cher, Matthew.
I'm a big fan of Whitney Houston.
Yeah, yes, you are.
I'll own up to that. Yeah. I grew up watching The Bodyguard, and I wanted to be Kevin Costner so bad.
Wow. Not too late.
Well,
she needs some help.
Whitney, she needs to rewind a few years in order for it not to be too late. I think it is a little poor. Whitney. So wait. So okay. So you got this show now on YouTube that premieres in April.
April 1st. Yes.
Okay. April 1st. Okay. You're coming up with some stuff for the Food Network now. Because you're there, you got to do the whole pitch process and everything still, or what's the deal
for at Food Network?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean the pitch process, and then just kind of reading for different other new shows they might have coming up.
What's your favorite? How do you go into a pitch? Because I got to pitch a show at Comedy Central in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Do you go in with too much information? Do you go, like, what do you bring with you? What is your pitch like? I know they're all different, but.
Well, we were trying to take out a magic show not too long ago, and we weren't able to sell it. But the pitch was kind of like, I mean, always had some trick and a good tape. But I feel like I tried to not over-prepare so that I can be myself.
I agree.
Because if I kind of show up talking a mile a minute, and then they're like, wow, this guy's hyper and full of himself. So I try to just kind of be chill and be prepared, but let it all go.
Yeah.
And have no expectations for how it's going to go.
I totally, I'm with you on that.
It's I don't know. I've not mastered it.
No.
Not at all.
Well, you seem to be doing really well, though.
Well, some things have worked out, but plenty of stuff has fallen through. So
yeah.
It's just a matter of
persistence. Well, you know, that's how it is, though.
That's how it is.
Exactly. One out of every 10 things hits, and then, you know.
If
you're lucky,
exactly.
If you're good.
Exactly.
So do you have your own production company you're starting? Or?
I don't yet, but, you know, this YouTube show we're doing right now is a pretty decent budget for the web, so it's kind of interesting being the producer for the first time and having to make these decisions. And
let's be honest about these web shows. Can you get by on the money you make off a show like that?
Well, if this is just, we're doing 15 episodes, so for the amount of time that we're putting into this, you know, not necessarily, but if it gets picked up for long term, which is great, but I'm looking at it as an investment into a bigger project. And,
I think it's great.
You
15
know,
episodes is great.
Something new that can then, you know, become something bigger.
Are you still shooting it?
We are. We've got 5 in the can.
Can I come check it out?
Yeah, man.
I'd love to watch it.
We're gonna shoot the live show on Tuesday night to use in the shows as well.
Oh, great.
So it's going to be like a street magic, sketch comedy, and then live show.
Oh, I think that's great. What's the sketch comedy aspect of it?
Let's see. We did, trying to think of some of my favorite sketch pieces. Well, we did a bit. You know, there's a magicians for years would do a publicity stunt where they blindfold themselves and drive through the streets and get press. So for the technology episode, blindfold myself, hop in the car, like I'm going to do that, relying solely on my GPS, and I immediately wreck an airbag deploy. So just little
you wrecked a
like
car?
That.
You had the money to wreck a car?
Well, and rental, full coverage, enterprise.
Great.
Are you going to get some of your, like, you know, buds in the business to be on the show and
well,
stuff?
We're working on getting a couple cool cameos.
Yeah.
But none of them have panned out yet.
You think you got to pull in Hardwick?
We're trying to get Mraz to do a cameo, but he's so busy right now.
Everyone's
Hardwick would
so
be great
busy.
To have on the show.
Everyone's busy.
Hardwick's a big Magic fan. So,
is he?
He's the reason this all happened for
That's great. Is he producing it, or he's just like?
He's technically the boss of all the shows on the channel. But
right.
He's given tons of creative freedom. He's like, here's a couple things that I would suggest, but do what you want.
So he's kind of hands off and lets
you
do.
Yeah, you never get to hear that in this town.
That's great.
So.
Well, you know, I think that's what's going to happen with all these lower budget and online kind of shows and. And it's kind of like that, I think, at Comedy Central and a couple other networks where the budgets aren't so big, so they kind of give you a lot more freedom to do whatever you want to do.
We think, you know.
Look at Workaholics. They brought on all their friends. And
totally. And that's the
they
thing.
Do their own show.
People hire these people to be their natural talents and be their natural personalities, and so often that gets muddled with notes from executives who don't get it, and then the show loses its touch, you know? So it's great when they just let people do what they do best and leave them alone.
So who works with you on this show? Who comes up with everything you're going to do for this YouTube show?
So I put
show?
Together a little magic brain trust. Derek Hughes is a great magician, comedian buddy of mine. And then Vinny DiPonto and Jeff Kaler are great magicians who I come in for this. Daniel Kino is a comedian who's helped writing the sketches and make it funny. And that's, I mean, pretty much the five of us just great
That's
in ourselves.
Awesome.
Great director, Jason Perlman, and you'll see it. I think it's going to have a look and feel different from most magic shows, that it just doesn't take itself too seriously, but still some badass stuff.
That's awesome. I guess my last thing for you, and we'll plug everything, is do you still consider yourself a Midwest guy?
100%.
That's great.
I love going back home. And
What's different about being Midwest here, you know, compared to what do you think makes you stand out as Midwestern out here?
I think maybe just my easygoingness. Like, I'm very low maintenance. Not that I think about it,
yeah.
But I think people from the Midwest are just kind of, they don't want to trouble you. They don't want to be an inconvenience.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Not in a passive way, but I think that goes a long way, because people out here get to be so full of themselves quick. And
do you ever feel like you work harder than a lot of... Because let's be honest, L.A., they take a lot of days off in this business.
They do take a lot of days off.
If there's a cloud in the sky, no go.
Yeah.
If Super Bowl Sunday, that's a five-day weekend.
Right.
If there's Martin Luther King Day, that's a five-day
right.
weekend.
Christmas Eve.
They're the only people that take off for, like, Kashmir Pulaski. Okay?
Right.
Like,
right.
Everything's a day off for these people, I heard. So do you feel like the work ethic from back home, like where we're from, you work a little harder and that helps out?
Yeah, you know, in Missouri, you never get a snow day, so you're used to working rain or shine. And I need to maybe learn to balance it out a little better, because I don't really know how to relax. I'm kind of always like, oh,
I'm
my God, what the heck do I need to do now?
I'm the same way. I have to be out of the house
yeah,
and
are.
Doing something.
Exactly.
I hate being home.
Exactly.
When I walk in my apartment, I just turn into this, like, awful human being.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel shitty.
Yeah.
I'm like, why am I here? I need to go work.
So that's that's where it comes from.
That's lovely.
Lovely.
Justin, I really appreciate you doing the show. I think you're great.
Well, thank you.
Justin Willman's Magic Meltdown is Tuesday, February 14th at 8 p.m. at the Nerdist Theater, which is in the back of Meltdown Comics. $8 for advanced tickets, $10 general admission. Once again, that is February 14th, Valentine's Day. Bring your dates. Don't bring your dates. Whatever.
Meet one there.
And you know what? There's going to be so many guys just reading comics in the ad store, and they're going to be like, oh, a magic show, and
yeah.
Head on back.
There you go.
I could take a break from this Superman comic. And then Cupcake Wars, of course, every Sunday night.
Yep.
New ones right now, right?
Yeah, new ones.
Yeah, and then...
we're shooting more starting next week, so even more.
And then very importantly, HTTP... Is that how those web things start? Colon
start.
With the
like
slash and the slash?
Backslash.
Well, really, what you need to remember is www.justinwillman.com. That's your website.
My website, two L's.
You got the Twitter or the Facebook thing?
All on there, yeah.
Okay,
Your mother can easily find me via my
she's
website.
She's going to add you.
There you go.
Now, wait, is it a like page? Is it a fan page or a personal page?
The personal page is kind of
she'll hunt you
not
down.
Personal anymore.
Yeah, she'll hunt
so
you down.
She'll find whatever she
she'll
wants.
She'll hunt you down.
Yeah.
She will be calling you, pal. She'll be like, Justin, when's my son going to get a job? He needs to make money.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she's great. Love her. anything else you need to promote?
You know, I also host a show called Scrabble Showdown on
yes.
the Hub Network, which is a lot of fun.
I never heard of the Hub Network. I thought you made it up.
It's a little
tell me about
network.
It.
It's like it's a kids and family network, kind of.
Is it like the game show network?
It's got a lot of game shows because Hasbro is a partner in it, so the, a lot of the games.
I don't have cable. This is
life.
Why.
Yeah.
So it's Hub, H-U-B.
H-U-B. And it's on the same time as Cupcake Wars. So if you're not a Cupcake fan, but you want to watch a word show with your kids.
Basically, if you're not a Cupcake, but you're a Justin Willman fan.
Yes, this is good.
The Scrabble
or you have a DVR,
show.
You can do both of them if you're my mother.
Yeah, yeah. Does your mother have Hub? Did she have to find
Hub.
It on the
she
dial?
Knows.
And
she's so excited.
What else is on there? You,
on the Hub?
Yeah.
They replay a lot of classic stuff. Doogie Howser, Family Ties.
This is my
cable.
Network.
Yeah.
I'm getting Hub.
Yeah, Gem and the Holograms is on there.
I am getting Hub.
Transformers. Yeah. Yeah, get Hub, dude.
That sounds like a good network,
good
actually.
Stuff.
I'm no Wonder longer going to bust your balls about that network.
I didn't make it up.
Hub is now fantastic.
Hub's where it's at.
Wow. That's great. You should come do the show whenever you want, man.
Dude, I would
You're
love
great.
That.
You're great.
Are you going to be here? You going to be here when we do it next?
Maybe.
Time?
Okay. Maybe.
I feel good because I'm like, I told Pat, I'm like, I want to have Justin Willman on. But I didn't know what to expect, and you're great.
Oh, good.
You're
well,
great. I'm glad.
You.
I was really interested in the whole cupcake thing. Then he told me you were a magician. and I'm like, stop, you're fucking with me.
You made that
I thought he was fucking with
really?
Me.
Really?
Yeah, of course, of course. So he hosts this cupcake show, and he also is a professional magician. On the no, not true.
This is that classic
true.
Twofer.
Yeah.
That old thing, that
yeah.
magic combo.
Well, I was actually more interested than in interviewing you when I found out you do the magic, too. And I think we asked all the important questions.
I think you did.
I think we got that
out
of the way.
We went below the surface.
Thank you so much,
about
buddy.
About this Coney dog.
I'm gonna put on a little tune and maybe a little more Etta James because I'm just so lame or
maybe
what?
Cher.
Oh, maybe. Yes.
How about some Celine? Come on. Don't
nah, Cher's better. We'll do some Cher. My brother Caesar, he's sitting in Chicago going Cher. No, don't do it. Don't do it.
Do it.
Don't do
he's
it.
Gonna
oh,
do
it's
it.
Coming.
He's
it's coming.
It.
Just because you guys are so awful to me. Yeah, what Cher song do we want to hear, though? Oh,
Ladies' Choice.
Does anyone, because Justin's like Ladies' Choice because he doesn't know any.
You don't know any Cher song?
I
okay,
do,
here's a good one. Oh, no, that
like
one's too short, though.
Cher?
It's not Cher.
It's not Cher. Zombie, that's Cher, right?
Okay.
Zombie.
She did Song
that
for
called?
You.
I don't know.
No way she did Song for You. She did a Ray Charles. Okay, you know what? I'm just going to believe it, and we're just going to go to break.
Rock it out.
Thank you, Justin Willman. Cupcake Wars, Sunday, justinwillman.com, and February 14th at Meltdown Comics at the Nerdist Theater. Thank you.
Places in my life and town. I sung a lot of songs and I've made some bad rhymes. I acted out my life in stages with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone now and I'm singing this song. Singing this song for you. I know your image of me is what I hope to be. I treated you unkindly, but darling, can't you see? There's no one more important to me. Darling, can you please see through me? We're alone now and I'm singing this song for you. You taught me precious secrets of the truth withholding nothing. You came out in front when I was out here. But now I'm so much better. And if my world listen to the melody, 'cause my love is in their hiding. I love you in a place where there's no space or time. I love you for my life, you are a friend of mine. And when my life is over, remember when we were together. We were alone and I was singing this song for you. We were alone and I was singing this song. Singing this song for you.
That's Cher with a song for you, which I did not know she does that song, to be honest. And there's more Cher playing. I got to turn off the Cher. She's getting out of control. Okay.
I think you just lost half your viewers.
Our listeners heard the share and they went bye-bye. Because now we have Ani and Jeffers, who I'm really, this is great for me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, as a writer, I'm very excited to have you on. And, you know, people keep saying to me, they're like, oh, you're having on another guy from The Gray?
Yeah.
Do you like that movie enough, Matt?
Thank you for having everybody connected with The Gray.
Yeah, I know. Well, I forget who I told, but I go, look, there's two good movies that have come out this year, The Gray and Detachment.
Yeah.
And I'd rather just continually support the great movies than some movie comes out this week and I'm interviewing someone and for a movie that's no good or I don't care about.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
we appreciate it. I mean, I you know, you've been really supportive and, you know, it's good. And I know the guys, they really do. You know, you obviously you dig it and you get it the way we wanted people to get it, and it means a lot. You know,
well, thanks. Hey, I'm glad to do it because I just think this movie, Rod Lurie called masterpiece.
That was nice to hear. Yeah. We didn't expect that one.
I even was involved in a conversation on Rod Lurie's Facebook. People were like, a masterpiece, Rod?
Yeah.
And he's like, trust me, it is.
Yeah.
He, you know, and he's a tough critic.
Yeah.
And he's a great director, and I mean, he knows good work.
Yeah, we got lucky with. Yeah, he can do it and he can talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say lucky. Well, no, I will say like we got lucky with the critics. It's sort of amazing how, you know, to me, people. It's really nice to do something and, like I said, just see it be gotten by people the way you want people to get it. And I didn't. I've certainly had the opposite reaction. And you know, to have people dig it, especially something that's challenging. I mean, it's not only challenging as a you know, an adventure story or a survival story. I mean, it's not fun, you know, to watch. It's challenging that way, but we get away with apparently, you know, getting other stuff in there and making a balance that, you know, we could have gotten crucified for, and we do. I mean, some people don't get it.
Yeah, man.
I read the reviews where they didn't dig it.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, okay, I see what you meant. And then you know, you look at the ones where they dug it, and they like the same thing. They like the same things the other guy hated, and I can see what they're saying. But I'm thankful that it seems like more people, or the people I care about, got it.
Well, you gotta help me out with something because being the guy that wrote the short, and then you and Joe wrote the screenplay. Okay. Here's the thing. I didn't take any credence to this when we had Joe on. There was an advocacy group of protect the wolves, blah, blah, blah. But, man, it is not stopping.
No,
so now
no.
I have to ask about it. Because I didn't ask Joe because I didn't give a shit.
Don't let Joe do it. Let me.
Well, here's the deal. Cause I only bring it up because Gavin Pallone wrote a column.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you read, right?
I didn't read it?
In New York Magazine.
I've heard about it. Yeah.
He sure does like to drop the phrase Birth of a Nation when comparing.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
Okay.
Well,
so,
no, you know what? You can certainly make that argument, and you can say that Hitchcock also did it to seagulls with the birds.
Right.
And at which point it becomes absurd. And the people who are. I mean, it's. Not to dismiss it, but it's irrelevant to the story to me, you know. And
I think most
of the people who are saying those things haven't seen the film.
Yeah.
They definitely haven't read the book, you know, because nobody's read the book yet.
Were real wolves killed during this film?
Oh, no.
Were real wolves eaten during this film?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Not my idea, I hasten to add. That's something that obviously I could see people getting up.
But no one
about,
killed
right.
the wolves
no.
just so
no.
Liam Neeson
no, no,
can
no.
eat one.
No, Liam Neeson is a guy who would let someone kill a wolf on his behalf. And nobody, I mean, look, these people, look. People involved in this thing are actors and writers. If there is a political debate about whether or not we should protect wolves, Getchwa's side, everybody's on, including Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, and not that we wouldn't empathize with ranchers in the areas where they're upset about wolves gaining in population, but if it was get on one side or the other, everybody is going to be siding with protecting wolves. And it's not about, does it demonize wolves? You could argue that. Is this movie saying wolves are bad and we should get rid of them? No, I mean,
no.
I can't even say that with this story, look, this story, I wrote the story, my dad, you know, had passed away a few years before I started writing it, and it was still that experience was still infecting pretty much everything I wrote. It probably still is to some extent. Otway is completely based on my dad. I mean, that's my dad, you know, that dude. And when I had managed to get to the age I'd gotten to, friends of mine had died. I mean, there are a lot of things that went into this story. A bunch of kids from my school got killed on a mountain, and six kids. They were younger than me. They were like the little, but that made it even worse because, you know, they were the guys who were sort of just coming in. They were the littles. They were the guys coming into the school as I was going out. And, you know, they were 16 years old. Six of them fell off a mountain. And that was part of this. And so even though, you know, that touched me to some extent, but it didn't, it was nothing compared to, you know, the effect that losing a parent had. And so when my dad was, you know, heading that way, you know, it was almost like I'd pretty much been a kid up until that point, and something opened up, a space opened up for me. I mean, so I've seen it. People say, well, you know, when you experience death for the first time, then you've touched the infinite, you know, and which is a very abstract thing, but it was really like a big black space, not in a horrible, not in a bad, like, hole of depression way, but this is like, okay, this is space, you know, this is where death touches life, and you get, when those two things connect, you get the whole idea of the delicacy of life and the preciousness of life. And things get distilled down to what are you, who are you, what matters. And when my dad, being my dad, didn't tell anybody in the families where he was headed. And so by the time we got alerted, we were, you know, it was over pretty much.
Yeah.
And he was in England at the time, an Irish guy. He's from the same county
as Liam.
Actually. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
My dad's ancestors. You know, his mom.
Funny how that worked out.
Yeah, well, that I know, because Bradley Cooper is not from the same country.
Right.
Nor were any of the other eight guys. You know,
wow.
From the same country. Who all would have been great, but Liam was, you know, when a guy connects to a role like that and does with this role what Liam did, it was. And I sent him an email when the thing was done.
Yeah.
You know, you put my dad on. You put my dead dad on film, and that's, you know, that's something magical somehow. I mean, how you got that?
Yeah.
You know, obviously he wasn't trying to do that. He didn't know the guy, but he managed to get or be whatever it was that, you know, that stuff represented. So when. I mean, and again, one of the original impetuses for the story was just a simple. When I was alone with it, just wanted to do a story. It was a simple adventure story. But when you get down to so how do those work? The first thing that you really get down to is just really that question: life hanging by a second, second left or second right, you know. And as I was saying, over in England where he was, and the doctor said, well, look, no, this is what's going to happen. And I was still saying, well, we can try this, we can try that, let's do this. And you know, the doctors were saying, no, this is what's going to happen. It's going to happen in a very short amount of time. I kind of felt like the hour hand kind of coming down. And that's what the essence of that moment and thinking about the sort of those two things bumping into each other is what immediately really became the engine for the story. Once I got past the... Okay, we're in the woods, and also I've been camping and I've gotten scared. I went camping. I got scared.
So
I wrote this story.
As the writer, though, and you wrote it, of course, and you know, it's been out a few weeks. I'm not going to spoil too much, but for people like my mother, and like you were saying, maybe even your mother and your neighbor, certain people that you know, like they're Transformers or whatever, and they're not used to movies like this, third acts like this.
Yeah.
Why? What was your reasoning behind it, and why is it to you so special of a third act?
I think it evolved that way. You know, like I said, I set out to write a simple adventure story, but then that went somewhere else. You know, and then as we got about the business of turning it into a movie, it became a fuller and fuller balance between those two things. And then, I mean, the ending was always ambiguous. But there was always a battle in it. There was always a final battle. Even in the last shooting script, you know, that was in everybody's hands the last week, there was that battle was there. And when I saw the rough cut, you get to the moment where Liam is piling up the wallets, and I was watching it, and I'd been through, you know, the ride that Joe had put together, and I felt the cut coming, you know, and at that moment, as he's piling up the wallets and facing these wolves, I was expecting to see what was in the script and what I knew that Joe had shot at least portions of, but I suddenly felt, well, you know what, he's pulled it off. It's not about a guy escaping from a bunch of wolves anymore. It's about all this other stuff, and I don't need to see the fight anymore. And I felt the cut coming right when I felt that it cut out, and it was perfect. And it was very ballsy, I think, of Joe to do and to pull off. But it is frustrating to people. But I think if we'd sewn it up and had to be a tidy ending. There was never going to be a tidy ending. The ending was always ambiguous. You see in the book's ending is ambiguous also. But to take the fight away from people, if we'd given it to them in an easy form, you set the problem, you solve the problem, you walk out of the theater and you're done. But to not solve the problem for people and to take away the easy solution, then they walk away and it's going to eat at them. And it, maybe it's cruel, but you know, I think to the extent that it's made it stay with people, then I'm glad that Joe stuck with it. And you know,
I'm glad Joe stuck with it too. I think the third act of the film.
Yeah, it was the right cut.
Look, the first two acts are great. It gets the tension going. It gets the thrills into it. Like opening the way it opens with the plane crash is fantastic. I think for if you compare it to other plane crashes and other films, the way Joe did it was really well, and he kept it claustrophobic, and like, it was tight. It was a tightly shot scene that was great.
Yeah.
But then the big thing for me was, okay, you had a really great first two acts. Mm. Now, if this third act, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat when he confronts that wolf at the end, but I'm like, the ending of this movie is when he's screaming to God, you know, when he has that come
Some
to God
like
moment.
Yeah.
And But I think the way it works out, it's great. But I kind of think if it continued, it wouldn't have had that lasting feeling. I don't think it would have had that intellectual value to it.
Exactly.
And it's not like it's too smart for people to get. I saw Detachment yesterday.
I think you can put together what's going to happen. Yeah.
Right. At least the gray is something everyone can see the gray, man, and get it. I love Detachment. Afraid no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
It's too smart.
Yeah.
It's too smart.
Well, that happens.
It's Tony K's confrontational in it, and it's too political and smart. But the gray is something where just because the ending's different doesn't mean you can't go enjoy and try a different ending, you know?
And people, I mean, there's being pissed at an ending. I was pissed at the ending of Seven and tipping my hat at the same time. You know, it was a brutal ending, and it was brilliant. I was very angry, and I completely enjoyed it. Not enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, no, Seven's great.
Do you want to enjoy that? I don't think you want to enjoy it. I know people say, when people say they like the gray, you know, I find myself saying, well, I'm glad you liked it. And then that doesn't suck. Do you like a movie like that? I don't know. But if it affected you and it got you somewhere, it meant something, you know, then good. You know, and it is accessible. I don't think it, I mean, yeah. People have complained there's too much. People who went in expecting just an action movie maybe were frustrated, but I don't know. I don't care.
I think Seven was a great comparison, though.
Yeah.
I really do think Seven is a great comparison. Yeah. And maybe it's because the internet is so prevalent now, but no one bitched about Seven's ending.
Yeah,
nobody.
But now we have the Twitter and the internet.
Right. And everyone
Thanks
can.
To God.
Oh. Yeah, and then, you know. What really, I guess, bugged me was I read a review by this. Yeah, I feel so strongly about this movie. I don't mind flame throwing a little, even though it's never going to help my career. But Lisa Schwartzbaum wrote a review for Entertainment Weekly.
Did she not see the movie? You know what? I missed that one, too.
Because you're smart.
No.
I missed a lot of them.
I used to be very stupid. I read all the Death Sentence reviews.
Every word.
I read every single one of those, and you know, because I wanted to learn. I mean, first of all, it's my first time out there, and I also wanted to learn. And I still, you should learn from bad reviews. So I've read some of them, but I'm working on another film now, and a very smart producer connected to that. You know,
what's the film you're working on now?
Oh, this is a thing with McGee. Okay. About NASCAR racers.
He's got This Means War coming out next week.
This one we're doing is very different. That's hilarious, by the way.
Oh, you've seen it? It's good.
Yeah, it's really hilarious. And you know, I mean, look, it's McGee in his most sort of Charlie's Angels cartoon.
Sure.
This is a comedy mode.
Sure.
So if you want something else from him, don't go see it. But if you get, when I saw Narc back to when I first saw Narc, I saw what Gavin Joe put it on for Gavin O'Connor and I in New York with like five other guys, and you know, we walked out of there face smacked, you know, and I saw Gavin the next day, and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, for what he wanted to do, he didn't make a single friggin' mistake. You know,
yeah,
it was exactly the movie he wanted to make, and maybe everybody won't get it, but he made exactly the movie he wanted to make. And McGee's movie was a completely opposite end of the spectrum, but I think he made exactly the movie he set out to make. And I was in a premiere audience you'd expect them to be sort of easy and gung ho. They're actually not. They're kind of jaded. Everybody was laughing. It was a good ride. It was a good, fun, just enjoyable.
It's always good, especially in the business now. Because it's different from when I was a kid. I remember growing up, and I'm 28 now, but when I was growing up, the business was a little different because indies got hot when I was in my teens, you had Miramax, and you thought there was hope.
Right.
So it's really great to see filmmakers. I've told my roommate this. Even if it's a bad movie, at least he made it the way he wanted to make it. Like George Lucas with Red Tails.
Yep.
Like, I give him a lot of props.
Yep.
Used his own money.
Yep.
Did what he wanted to do. No other cooks in the kitchen. Aaron Hemingway. But I mean, I appreciate that. Have you seen Narcade?
No, I haven't.
I think you'd like it.
Really?
Yeah. Not many people have.
Ray Liotta and Jason Patrick give performances in it that are just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And the writing's really, really good. And Joe's style of directing's just amazing.
Yeah.
We had the guy on. I like him a lot. That doesn't matter. I got to tell you. Seriously. I think he's one of the best directors in Hollywood.
You know, well, I think he proved it.
I really do.
He proved it on this one. And he's, you know, it's easy to underestimate. You know, he's had, everybody has, you know, they have different stages. They do different things. And you know, people have underestimated Joe. And maybe the ones who have, you know, done it the most are still not won over by this one. Everything's a matter of taste, you know. But I think he's won a lot more admirers with this one, and I'm glad about it. I mean, it's, you know, but Narc is exactly what he wanted to do, and This Means War for McGee, you know, like I said, you know, he just popped it out exactly the way he wanted.
So is he producing the film you're working on with him, or directing
it?
Direct,
that's
that's great.
It's very, very different from.
Is it a comedy?
Yeah.
Is it a?
No,
oh no,
it's a. I mean, it's not heavy, but it's more. He did a film called We Are Marshall about a football team where the plane did plane crashes, they lose everybody.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't have that melancholy because there isn't. You know, that sort of challenge. The character's not facing that kind of challenge. But it's probably the best way. It's just an American sports movie, and these drivers from the 50s were just amazing dudes, incredible guys, and not, you know, they weren't pampered stars. These were guys who, the main guy we're basing it on, Junior Johnson, is a very famous driver. One of the dominant drivers through the 1950s, won the second Daytona in 1960, and he was, you know, quit school at fifth grade. He drove moonshine for his dad. His dad was one of the biggest moonshine producers on his little farm in the country. And,
are you including that in the movie? The moonshine?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? Yeah, no, that's Junior Johnson.
That's
he makes moonshine now, but now it's legal.
Yeah.
And you know he's got the last laugh. And but he was his dad made the stuff, and Junior from the age of about 14 was driving it. And the economics of it was you had to make, you know, four or five runs a night. You could only fit what you could fit in a car. Yeah, if you did a truck, it was too obvious. You know, a couple of guys were doing school buses and trucks, but it was too obvious. The best way to do it was in a fast car that didn't look like a fast car. So he got really good at working engines. All these guys knew engines inside and out. Junior is the fucking Mozart of engines.
Yeah.
That guy, I spent a week with him in North Carolina. I left being convinced he was a genius. He's just this, like, easygoing, you know, completely unassuming guy. And a genius. What the stuff he was doing with Engines was
phenomenal. Was this your idea to do this movie, or they pitched it to you, or what?
It came to me, my agents. They knew, I've been trying to do a racing movie for years. But I wanted to do a formula.
So you're knowledgeable about racing.
And, well, this was formula. I had wanted to do a formula movie, and I may be doing one after this, which my agents are like, right, what is your, what is the matter? What's with the racing thing? It was a phenomenal formula driver called Ayrton Senna. He's a Brazilian guy, and an amazing driver also in the formula world. But that sort of came after. But I had just been looking for a racing story of some kind, and my agents knew it, and they just called me one day with this one, and I didn't really know that much about NASCAR or about Junior, but by the end of the phone call, I was in, you know, and really, we jumped into that. It was a matter of days. You know, I went up and saw, you know, the guys at Wonderland, and it was within a matter of days. We were just, all right, let's go, you know, let's do this. And they got me on a plane to go see Junior, and that was an incredible, the guy's 80.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to understand who this guy was as a driver. So, I mean, you know, starts at 14, driving pretty fast, you know, so he had to make a bunch of runs a night. And he invented the handbrake turn, known as the bootleg turn, which you see in movies all the time.
Right,
drop it down, kick it,
yeah,
kick it down,
the Fast and the Furious.
The exactly, he invented that. Well, I asked him, everybody says he invented it. And this guy, he's the Robin Hood of NASCAR drivers now. He is beloved in this world. He really is. He's Robin Hood. They love this guy. And so legends have grown up around him, and when I spent time with him, you know, I got to actually say, so, you know, things like, so did you really invent the bootleg turn? And you know, he looked at me and said, well, I definitely used it. So I don't know if he did invent drafting, or at least he discovered drafting in the NASCAR world.
That's wild.
And that's how he won Daytona. He had a slower car. He didn't have any backing, because to get to who he was, I'll get back to that, but who he was as a driver, he would get in the car and just drive the living hell out of the car. And he got away from, you know, he made all his deliveries, made a lot of money for his dad that way, but the cops would get on him. There were a lot of cops who really were full-time trying to catch him and the other 20 kids down there who were doing this for a living. And they caught the other guys, but they could not catch Junior on the road ever. He was just an amazing driver on the road. And then one day he heard, you know, up the road there at a cornfield, they had a dirt track that some, you know, professional quote unquote racers were doing, which is nobody was a professional racer. They were not professional racers, but they wanted to do a little kind of a sort of a carnival, sort of bump it up thing. They didn't call it this, but they just got all the kids who were driving moonshine. They didn't advertise it as a shiner race, but that's what it was. They just got all the teenagers who were the badass illegal drivers and said, guys, come and have a race.
That sounds like a great idea for a movie.
It's a
do you got
story.
A title for it yet? What's the working title?
The working title is, well, I just call it Junior Johnson. I mean, that's really the only thing that I don't know what we'll end up doing, but Junior's a phenomenal, he's an inspirational guy. He's a pedal to the metal guy. When he got on the track, his style was, you know, gun goes off, put his foot on the floor and never took it off. He won. He won so many races, but if you look at his stats, his wins are just about equal to his DNFs, which is dude did not finish. He'd either come first, blow up the engine, or drive off the track. And I said there were drivers who put up better stats by kind of being a little bit more strategic. Lee Petty, not to malign the style, but Lee Petty was a little bit more strategic. You know, he said, well, look, I'm not afraid of crashing, but if I crash, I don't win. So I'll just take it a little easier and I'll win. And I said to Junior, didn't you ever, you know, this is 40 years ago now. He's had a little time to think about it. You know, did you ever want to slow down? You know, did you ever want to just maybe play it safe and not blow your engine up? He's like, no, that didn't interest me.
Is this going to be McGee's next movie? Or?
I hope so. That's the plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they're telling me anyway.
Ma, you on the phone again?
Yes, I am, dear.
All right, okay. Ian Jeffers wrote The Gray. He wrote the short story before when it was called, what, Ghost Walker, was it?
Yeah, the novella
was
called.
Yes, and I have questions.
I'm
not going to say I love the movie, and I'm not going to say I hate the movie, but it made me think, but all the time not in a good way, until I went back. Okay, my two biggest questions, my two confusing things. They crossed that river, very deep canyon. They swung across to the other side. how the hell did the damn wolves get over there if it was the same pack? Or are we going on the fact that another pack of wolves started following them when they crossed the river?
Can we get Joe on the phone? I would just like to ask, why am I getting animal rights, and how do the wolves get across the river?
I'm not doing for animal rights. This was just really confusing to me. I thought once they crossed the river, they would get away from that pack of wolves.
I think with a bigger budget, we would have shot it in a way that wouldn't have been a question. But I think the logic was, there's definitely not another pack of wolves. But I think the logic was these are the same wolves, and also the territory. Maybe it's not made completely obvious, but the territory there are places where the cliffs are very high and places where they aren't. And when at that moment in the story, if I remember, we haven't seen the wolves for a while, and we're thinking, well, maybe we're just dealing with freezing to death or dying of starvation, and maybe they're going to leave us alone. Maybe we're walking out of their territory, and they're going to give us a pass. And so that moment is sort of a surprise. And actually, you're the first person who's brought it up, aside from my wife. My wife is the only other person who's brought it up. So you guys should probably get on the phone. No one else. I haven't seen a critic or anyone else been bothered. But there are moments. We call it geography. I'm going to say we call. Joe calls it geography. But in the three-dimensional space of a film where you've got to set things up, or you try to set things up in a way that feels interpretable. There's another moment where Frank's character is just giving up the ghost and he lays down to die, and Liam exits that shot. And in an earlier cut, Joe might smack me for getting this wrong, but it seemed to me that in earlier cuts, as you begin that slow push into Frank, that there was a little bit more wolf in the soundtrack that made it seem, in watching it, that a wolf was coming up on him. And in later, and it seemed to me that in the final cut, Joe backed that down so that we aren't telling you, yeah, a wolf is going to come get him, because it just didn't. I think if Joe did make that change, I never asked.
Okay,
him.
Well, that was my other complaint with
right,
it.
Right,
I mean, because that guy like, was so gun ho. He was going to live. Lynn Nielsen was an idiot. He didn't know anything. That guy was going to lead them through stuff, and all of a sudden he sees that mountain, and he goes, that's it, I'm done.
Wait, I'm sorry, I think I missed the question.
Okay, no, I'm just, because he was just so gung-ho on living and getting out of there, and all of a sudden he
okay.
just
You mean, why does Diaz give up? Why does Diaz give up? Okay, cool. Okay,
it didn't make any sense.
Yes,
but,
no, I see what you're saying. I get it. No, he as a guy, he is...
Matthew, shut up.
You're not really my... Are you my mom? Did you get my mom?
Yeah,
okay.
Well...
No, this is... I'm getting interviewed by my mom. No, the thing that I loved about Diaz's character as he evolved is that you meet a guy who's full of bluff, full of bravado. He's going to steal what he needs to steal. He's going to beat whoever he needs to beat. He's done time. And he's all shell, you know, and then Liam calls him on it in that scene and says, look, you don't need this stuff. And when he gives up, and he says he wants to, of course he wants to, we all like to go home alive. You know, the idea is that we get back, but when he gives up, there are two things. I think it's kind of completes the reversal of his character, that as much as he says he wants to get back, I think through this process, he realizes that what his life has been has not been any good to anybody, which is something that's sort of ported over a little bit from Otway's character. It's sort of, you know, it's funny, between the book and the film, things sort of morph and become, the book is a little bit different in the way Otway plays out and what the origination of Diaz's character plays out. So it sort of completes that reversal, that this sort of bravado goes away and he says, you know what, I can give up. It's not so much that he has to give up, just that he can give up, and he can just sort of let it go. That's one thing. The other thing, it's a much, much simpler answer that I probably should have given you first. As he's walking away to sit down, you see his back, and his back is ripped open.
Yeah.
So he's not giving up, and he's not tired. Yes, he's tired, but he's tired and he's half bled out. That's really it. It's the sort of, maybe he could fight on a little bit, but I think he just feels that whatever strength he has is gone, and he'd rather...
But you could hear the wolves coming up behind him as they're walking away, as the screen is panning into his back. You can hear the growling.
I think, but
I don't
also,
think that was growling. I think that was the weather, man.
There are a lot of other places in the film where those growls are used as kind of a sound design, and I don't think really it's Joe's intention to say that that the camera moving in on Frank is a wolf coming in on him, because Liam would be 5 feet away. So we'll have to get Joe back on it and find out. But my read on that scene is that it's that creep is again.
Yeah.
You know, these wolves, yes, they're real wolves, but this is really about what can come and get you in your life. You know, is it yeah. completely out of
yeah,
money?
Yeah, and I get all that, because I was texting Matt during the movie, because I was very confused when I went to the movie.
She's texting
and
me
I was
during the movie. And
I was with seven other people who were equally confused.
Who texts during movies, Ma? You're not supposed to do that.
Well, I was in the back row at Hollywood, and I was texting you.
Okay.
And everybody kept going, what does Matt have to
you know
say?
What
does Matt know about
there,
this?
And she reads my scripts, and then she has a thousand questions, too.
No, I have not. I've only read one of your scripts, and that's the one script that I like that you've never done anything with.
Oh, you really are my mom. My mom, by the way. My mom.
I think
made,
I'm everybody's mom. I don't know. But anyway, those were the two things I had. I mean, it really, yes, it is a thinking movie. Yes, I did not. I mean, I understood
Karen,
him piling the wallets up and the desperation at the end and him probably knowing he was going to die and his speaking with God and, like, you know, and like my husband said, Matt's father said, he was waiting for the damn helicopter to come.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
No. No
helicopter. And I just, shut up, Matt. I just wish there would have been a definitive helicopter not coming.
Well, if you want to find out what really happens at the end, you can get the book and you find out what really happens at the end. But there are no helicopters. Maybe imaginary ones, but no.
Well,
real.
In his mind there was imaginary ones. I knew the helicopters weren't coming.
But
I guess it made full circle because in the beginning we see him wanting to shoot himself.
Yep.
And for some reason he stops. And he has this desire to go on and live.
You see why if you that's more explicit in the book too. That's the bizarre thing about, or the fun thing about doing something as a book and a film at the same time. There are things that you can treat in the book that you don't have space necessarily to treat in a.
Okay, well, I didn't know it was a book, and I will read the book now. And I know that adaptations of movies from books are generally extremely hard to do.
Let me tell you,
to get totally off subject from your movie, the best adaptation I've ever seen was The Help.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew, I swear to God, when I get out there, I'm going to smack you.
Right after the grab.
The Help. Yes.
It was. I mean, really, it was pretty much even word to word from the book.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
There was one small change at the end that's not in the book, but that was it.
That movie.
And I haven't seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo yet, so I don't know how close that is to the book.
I have. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is good, but, Ma, you don't want to see
Finch's
that. Version. I don't want you to see
you
that movie.
I read all three books.
Why don't I want to see the movie?
Because there's some graphic rape in that movie, Ma.
Well, it was pretty graphic in the book, too.
Yeah, right.
Well, you don't visualize it. Now you see it.
All right. You know what? I had my eyes closed through half of the gray. I will close my eyes through that part of the girl.
My problem with The Help is the same problem I have with movies like Mississippi Burning, and they're full of shit.
Yeah.
They make up. Oh, I'm not even going to get into that conversation.
We're not going to do this on broadcasting either. We'll do this in private. You're an idiot. But other than that, but anyway, Ian, it was nice to talk to you. You've cleared up some things.
Yeah, can you at least thank Ian, because if this was Joe, he would have told you F off 20 minutes ago, and you don't know what you're talking about.
Joe loves his mom. No, Joe would have taken more time with you than I did.
I think I had some vital points, though, and the fact that, Matthew, you could have told me this was a book, I would have had the book ordered and read it already. But you never told me it was a book.
Ma, you read those dime romance novels.
I don't just read dime romances, and they don't cost dimes anymore.
Well,
they're a heck of a lot more expensive.
what, Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know
you were going to come to my defense.
Walker slash the Gray.
Well, I'm glad you went to see it. And I'm glad
did go to see it. I went with, like I said, I went with seven other people. There were four couples.
You reached
that
the compass. That's not really Ian's work. Have you seen Death Sentence, Ma, with Kevin Bacon and John Goodman? And
well, that was my comedy.
Yeah.
That was my buddy comedy that I did.
Oh.
A comedy?
Yeah, No.
I
don't think that would be your favorite film either, Ma.
No.
My mom's
well,
like,
Matthew,
you have on that night.
Nice talking to you, Ian. Goodbye, Abe.
Three kids, and all I hear. What, you know, I'd like to at least I can talk about the Gray. I can mention the title in front of them. I didn't want to. Do you want to talk about Death Sentence in front of your kids? No, you really don't.
I'll be honest with you though. I think my mother calling in and talking to you is the best defense you're going to have for anyone that gives you shit about
you know
the movie.
You just answered everybody's question.
Yeah, you could be like, listen. Yeah. Listen, there's a 50-plus-year-old woman who had questions, and they're answered.
Yeah, I'm going to pretend that it sounds like you liked it more than you didn't. So I'm going to.
What? If you'd have talked to me the day after the movie, I blasted poor Bruce Fretz about his review for it. It's been almost 2 weeks, and I'm a lot mellower about it, and I've thought about it and everything, and I can see all that kind of stuff now. But truthfully, the first 48 hours after I saw it, I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Well, but it's one for the money down the hall.
You know what? It's amazing. Things can go either. Like I was saying, I read the bad reviews, I see what they're saying. I read the good reviews, I see what they're saying. I like the good ones more. But you know,
obviously,
things can be received in a number of ways, and it's just anybody who sits through that movie and hates it. I don't have a, you know.
Can I tell you something else, Matt?
I can get it. I can see why.
And this is another reason why those people need to back off, those wolf advocates or whatever.
I didn't even know wolf advocates were out there.
Well, let me tell you something. They are.
They suddenly
Neither did they, right.
The wolf advocates didn't like it that the wolves were killing people?
Well, I don't know. They're crazy. But I interviewed Joe. I interviewed Frank Grillo, and I've interviewed Ian now. And I got to tell you, you're not going to find a nicer bunch of guys in Hollywood.
I'm not saying they're not nice. The movie confused me.
There's a lot of scumbags.
I had questions. I was confused.
Let them make their art. You just enjoy it.
I didn't say they couldn't make their art, Matthew. You're putting words in my mouth.
I wanted to know about things.
I didn't understand why Frank just suddenly had to give out. Now I can't find my glasses. Oh, there they are.
Come on. And you like Frank Grillo, Ma. You're in there.
Frank, is
the women love him.
Frank is amazing.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was great, even as a bad boy. I mean, and confused. And whatever. And that's why I was very upset that he just... 15 minutes after getting slapped out of his stupidness, he gave up and died, or the wolves got
him. Well, he was bleeding to death.
Yeah, that's really
neither here nor there.
Really
I know. I understand it better now.
Most people.
Like I said, if I'd have known it was a book, I would have read the book, and I wouldn't be on your show right now.
But, okay, well, all right.
Well, actually, that moment's not even in the book, so. That's part of an adaptation.
Were you in the book?
No. Not that moment. There are different things. It's adaptation. There are different things. Different things in the book.
Right.
How long is the short novel?
The novel.
The novella.
What's coming out now is it's a very short book. It's sort of Old Man and the Sea size. Maybe 140, 150 pages.
So it's a quick read.
Yeah, you can't sustain. I couldn't sustain what this needs to sustain over a 300 page.
Right.
Journey, and it's the original novella was we call it in the credits a short story, but it was really it was a small novella, and it got bigger as I was working on the script. The novella got bigger and bigger, so that got to be pretty sizable. So the distance from because it was my way of working things, that's what I'm doing with the next one too. After McGee, the thing I'm doing with McGee, I've got one that I want to direct. That's sort of it's not a sequel to The Gray, because that would be hard, but it's a follow on, and I'm doing the same process with that, which is basically writing it out as a novel and then you know, interpreting it and adapting it myself. But that one I'm gonna direct. But it's a way of.
Okay, well, let me know what the name of the novel is first, so I can read it first before I see the movie.
And also, I'll do that one the right way around. That one will come out for the movie instead of.
Okay. All right, well, I will let you guys go so Matthew can finish interviewing you. It was very nice talking to you. Thank you for taking my stupid questions. And Matthew, I am not an idiot. Stop treating me like one.
I didn't say you're an idiot. No one can.
I'm very glad you came on. I'm glad you had questions.
No, okay. Goodbye, dear, and I will see you in a week or so.
Okay, I got to click the X button here. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
You should have my mom on next week.
Right,
you'll get a review from
you. Get them on together. They can play Mahjong and tell me how awful of a human being I am.
There are no tougher critics in the world. My mom's unbelievably supportive, but, you know, only when... I mean, thank God she liked this one. I couldn't have gone through the kind of faint, you know, reaction that I got on Death Sentence, where she tried to be nice, but, and, you know, look, Death Sentence was not a bad, James Wan is one of, talk about nice guy, he literally, have you met James?
Yeah, James, no, I haven't met James Wan, but he's done some good work, Saw, we did the first Saw.
I mean, he's a very, very good director, but other than that, I mean, literally, one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
That's great.
In the town or
so at least you keep working with guys that are good
dudes. I've been very lucky. Yeah. Well, How'd you get started out here?
Where are you from, Joe? Which area are you from out here?
We're sort of New Yorkers. I grew up in Connecticut and what used to be a farm, and lived in England for a while with my dad. And then, my dad and the other 17 of us in our family.
Holy crap.
Just eight of us.
Well, my dad has 13 in his.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no. So you say 17, I believe it.
No, we were eight, and my grandmother, this is probably a lie, but it's the lie I was told growing up, which is that she was one of 14 children. This is the Irish. So,
yeah.
You know, they, one of 14 children, six of whom were twins. So they had three sets of twins. And it doesn't really seem physically possible to me, but, you know, I believe it. That's what they told me.
That's wild.
But, most of my grown-up life, though, was in New York. I was doing little plays, often with my wife, Jenny Jerome. You know, she created something else I want to direct is this adaptation of a play I did with her called A Crack in the Ground that she created the role for and something that, you know, we did together years and years and years ago. And it's kind of like I haven't been able to let it go, and I want to do it as a film soon. And actually, I've talked to Liam about it. I've talked to Kevin about it.
Oh, wow.
They've both told me that they have no interest whatsoever in doing it, but I'm going to keep talking to them about it. Whichever one of them will do it one day. I want to do it, get it up again as a play, and then also do it as a film. But anyway, so Jenny and I were doing, we did little plays and tiny little, you know, sweaty little theaters and I learned about, where you can lead an audience and where you can't lead an audience and how far you can push them and how far you maybe shouldn't push them if you still want to have them. And you sit in a little theater like that. And if you're boring people, it's like it's like being connected to a cattle prod. I mean, you just feel it immediately, you know, immediately. We did the first night we did that one play. It was I'm exaggerating, but it's like a 7-hour play. It's not really that long, but it was just, there was, you know, stuff going on, and you know, it was just, I was blurting all this stuff out that I wanted to blurt out, and I blurted it all out, then after the first night I cut 30 pages, the second night I cut another 20 pages,
the actors got that.
Oh, they were happy, are you kidding?
Yeah.
No, the best nights.
Do they, they studied all those lines.
Well, let me tell you how to cut a play. Get a bunch of actors to put it on. And they're going, everything's going great, and when they suddenly skip 10 pages, and keep going on the next cue, and nobody notices. Those are the 10 pages you cut. It's like, oh, okay, we didn't need those. And no, it became very easy to cut and to compress. And no, the actors loved it because the memorization was a nightmare. It was a complete nightmare. But by the end of 4 weeks, I had it down. That thing was probably two-thirds of what it had originally been, and it taught me just doing that one play. I did others with my wife, but that one play taught me more about writing for actors and for putting something up than anything. And Joe had read it. Hadn't seen it, but he'd read it. And he made Gavin go see it, Gavin and Greg. And Gavin had just sold. He'd come off a movie. This is a long time ago now. He'd come off a movie called Tumbleweeds, and had set up something in the studio with, and he wanted someone to work with on it. And you know, they came and saw it, and I think we had lunch like the next day. And Gavin had a baby a few months old, and Jenny had our first on the way. And we talked about maybe trying the West Coast, and Gavin said, "Come to the movie with me." So we, we, you know, it's New York. We couldn't afford. We knew we had to move anyway. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was like our place was too small, and we had to get out anyway. So we thought, okay, we'll try it. And Gavin and I worked. Have you met Gavin?
No.
We like
good director.
Oh God.
And Miracle
killed,
was
killed each other. Oh. Killed each other, and just and got it. You know, just smacked the living shit out of it until it was like a lump of iron. I mean, Gavin is not an easygoing guy.
It's like that's good.
Six foot four. I'm 5'8" of anger disorder. He's 6'4" of anger disorder. It was a fun room to be in. And but he's the reason he, you know, that was probably the toughest collaboration I've ever done. But Gavin, like Joe, commits 1,000,000,000% to something.
Yeah.
And you see, and you know, again, his films maybe. Their reception has been up and down too. I think on Warrior, even though it wasn't a big smash,
critically
people
though.
Get it. Yeah. Yeah, and that to me, I think that's Gavin doing what Gavin was supposed to do. So we did together and just you know, we killed ourselves on it, killed each other on it, and got it to a place where it was just about friggin' perfect. And
yeah.
For us, and you know, unfortunately for the studio, they had hired it was a studio, you know. And they hired Gavin O'Connor. What they expected from Gavin, if they expected a by-the-numbers thriller,
right?
Like it was not a by-the-numbers thriller by any means, and they weren't willing to. They wanted it to be a by-the-numbers thriller, and that's not what we gave them. And so that was it. Just like that. That was that movie, and we just, and it's sitting there. And maybe one day it's Gavin's to do.
Is that something you'd think that could happen one day?
I would love it. But the funny thing is, now that with the time that's passed, we'd probably want to.
Update it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, which means another year of hell. But
yeah, I know how that is.
But no, it's, and also there was a similar film, History of Violence, kind of killed it too. It was
yeah,
a similar sort of
Cronenberg's
feeling.
Film. Yeah,
yeah, it was kind of a similar feeling, and it sort of knocked it. So we just put a pin in it. And but it's still, you know, it's Gavin's and mine to do.
You know, good thing is you didn't do it for spec.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, no, it was practically for spec.
Oh.
Yeah, it was my first gig.
Oh,
so, and then
Hollywood.
That was it. And then we stayed, and I've been, you know, and then I did The Gray, probably not that long after that one. And then, but as you know, it took us forever to make that happen. We had
yeah.
half a dozen different actors. And
so you did Death Sentence after you technically got The Gray off the ground. Then,
you know, I cannot even remember, but I think so. It was around
yeah.
the same time, and because it was, I know it was coming. The film with Gavin was called Safety.
Yeah,
and which everybody in town has read, but. But, you know, maybe one day it'll get made. I don't know. I don't know if Gavin wants to even go to that place. But it was around that time. And the original, and when I was, you know, Death Sentence, it got a bad rap. Getting into that as a writer was, it's funny because now Joe's doing Death Wish. You know.
Yeah.
Joe, do you have to, like, humiliate you? So now you're going to go do what I tried to do with that. But our whole take on it was, it was exactly what's been quoted for what Joe's going to do, which is that, you know, it was going to be Sidney Lumet and it was going to be Jack
yeah.
Lemmon. And we got Kevin, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly right for that kind of thing. And we wanted to do, and John Jashing, I remember, who left the project because he went off to run Legendary. But before we had, we were sitting waiting to go into the first meeting, and we were sort of both out in the reception
yeah.
area. And, you know, that was how I met John Jashing. And he said, well, you know, my ideal version of this is, we were talking about our kids in school and stuff like that. I mean, my ideal version of this is, it's me. You know,
yeah.
this is a guy like me. It happens. What am I going to do about it? And that was the seed that we took. And it began at the script stages, it worked at some points really, really perfectly at that level. And then James shot it. You know, God, just exactly right, you know, for how we wanted a lot of that stuff done. And the performances, a lot of the performances were phenomenal. Not
yeah.
not all the performances were phenomenal.
I thought,
you know, they were, I mean, in The Gray, there's not
right.
a false note anywhere. In Death Sentence, there were, you know, some were some stuff. Garrett, unbelievable. Garrett Hedlund, an incredible actor. Unbelievable, unbelievable.
Yeah, and he was so good in that movie, it kind of pigeonholed him into that character.
Yeah, and you know, but he's going.
Yeah.
We expected Tron to pop him. It wasn't right for him. I think maybe on the road we'll do it for
there
him.
There will. Something will.
If it isn't that, it's going to be something else. Because the thing is, you see that movie and you go, gee, that guy's pretty badass.
Yeah.
He's interesting. But if you know him, the physical transformation, he managed to that he was 20 pounds heavier than he was. You know, he just acted 20 pounds heavier. He didn't get 20. He just acted 20 pounds heavier, and he was. And the intensity that he had, and he's one of those, you know, at the time, I remember on the set, you know, he was sort of, you know, certainly new, you know, more green at it than Kevin. I mean, Kevin's been doing and doing and doing, and Kevin was pretty chill. You know, Kevin shows up.
Kevin Bacon was great in that movie, too.
He's great. I had lunch with Kevin the day before yesterday. We were sort of going through what happened with Death Sentence. Because it was only, you know, it was 89, 95% of a perfect movie, but then the parts that where people didn't get it or pulled it down. But no, I love what Kevin did and what he was. Kevin was phenomenal.
I liked it, man.
Garrett was phenomenal. Eddie Gathegi, who I'm still buddies with, he played. He was one of the gang guys, Bodie, and then he went on and done the Twilight films, and he was in Crank and a bunch of other things. I saw him the other night, and you know we're still friends. And he and you know people were everybody in it really sort of popped. But sometimes a thing comes together and everything's just right, and sometimes it didn't. And
right.
There's a perfect version of that film, and look, a lot of people loved it. But
well, I gotta guess that
certainly no critics loved it.
I guess that's what Joe's trying to do because you know, I know critics didn't like it, but what were they expecting?
Well,
what did they want then?
But there's a version. I think Joe will hopefully hook if he does. When we got to do this, I said if you take this idea and these guys and you go to the place you went with NARC, he may not remember this, but I said you'll have a critical and commercial smash. Yeah, and kabing, you know, like he could have. I could have given this to somebody else. You know, I could have said, "Hey, come do this with me." And but it was knowing Joe. He and I had trailed each other on other scripts before. He was the only writer I would trust. You know, sort of to partner on with this and to go shoot the thing. But there are other in other hands. They would have taken most of the intricate stuff about the grade and cut it out. First thing they would have done is taken it out. You know, and that would have stunk. So if he stays true to what it seems like he's coming at Death Wish with and holds to that, he'll smack it again, you know, and it'll be great, and it'll be the version that I wanted to do, you know, with James that we almost did. I mean, I'm making it sound like it's not a good movie. You know, what James did in that was he did a lot of incredible, great stuff.
And
great,
it's shot stuff. Really well. Yeah. I don't know who the DP was on it, but
oh my God,
really good.
Oh, I'm blanking on his name, and I'm going to die because he's awesome.
Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, I'm going to kill myself later. He's phenomenal.
I want to tell our fans listening, we're going to go into overtime for a few minutes, which you can catch on our website and iTunes. I want to ask you, someone sent in a question about my producer and someone on Twitter, and then we got questions here and stuff. Someone want to ask you about Game of Thrones. Says you're a big fan.
Yes.
You really into that show?
Well, only because of Nunzo, actually. Nunzo knows he's in it, and he. But no, I've had nothing to do with it. But
right, but you're a big fan.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Nunzo.
Okay.
That's an interesting world to me. I mean, I'm really not a fantasy kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I do, having lived because of my dad lived in England for a while. It's not England. It's a fantasy place, but it's. You know, living in England, you're surrounded by the medieval all the time. The church down the street from us was 900 years old.
Yeah,
I used to eat lunch in the courtyard. When Windsor Castle's open, I went to this sort of, kind of crummy high school up the street from Windsor Castle.
Yeah.
And I would go and take my bag lunch and sit there in Windsor Castle, which is, 1,000 years old. And so you're surrounded by this stuff. And so I dig it. I really dig it from that. The whole feudal...
Right.
It's a distant connection, but Kurosawa, probably one of my favorite directors, and I don't know if anybody else has compared it, but the feudal, he does the feudal thing very well. And so I do, it's sort of, I think Game of Thrones is my guilty pleasure. You know? And Nunzo is, Nunzo plays Burke in The Grey, and you know, really
good in that
very,
too,
very affecting performance, and you know, the guy is... that's a lot of guy. That's a big dude. And a very, you know, it's funny to see, like, you know, a sensitive, as sensitive a performance and as sensitive a guy as he is in that package that you're not going to fuck with.
That's really good. I did want to promote for our live listeners right now before we go. Next week, waiting on confirmation for a Wednesday show, but we're going to have something Wednesday. And on Thursday, Keegan Michael Key and Jordan Peele from Key and Peele on Comedy Central. They will be on from 2 to 4 Pacific time, 4 to 6 Central, and 5 to 7 Eastern, I believe. I believe I got that math right. I want to ask you about, we talked just about Game of Thrones. Oh, yeah, do all you guys, Joe, you hang out with Joe, Gavin, you, do you all hate comedy?
No.
No one's making a comedy out there.
Well, no, I mean, one day I'll dare to make a comedy. I enjoy comedies. I just don't know if I can. Like, I was laughing my ass off at the Cheese thing the other day.
And it was John R. Leonetti who did the DP on...
John Leonetti, yeah.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And brilliant. And
Pat Tobias, my booker, sent me that.
Thanks. Yeah. No, he is... What he did shit on that film that, you know, people were... other DPs were jumping up and down saying, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? And you know... He has not been. I wanted him to see Working Like Crazy right after that, and it kind of pains me that maybe just the fact that the film wasn't as well received as it should have been.
He did a good job.
Somehow, you know, it gets missed. What an amazing job! But there's one shot where they're in the parking garage. There's a foot chase in the parking garage, and one of the open on the sides, and he had a guy in a crane. He had a handheld, and he was running after Kevin. He had two, three operators. He was running after Kevin, following him. And then Kevin would run up the stairs, and he would hand this camera to a guy sitting on a crane who would then float up with it continuous while Kevin was running up the stairs inside, and then pick up Kevin coming out on the other side, and then hand it to another way. They were passing the camera basically like a football. They basically ran a play with a camera.
That's wild.
And it's this one long, and DPs were like, wait, how'd you do that
thing? And I loved it, too, because they had It had like an updated 70s look to it.
Which was a very, very important.
Yeah. Which was really kind of like Narc in a way.
Yep.
And that's what made Narc so great. It had a really Billy Friedkin like look to it.
Love
and everything.
Friedkin. And that whole era. And it was exactly, again, even in the writing stage, I wanted it to feel like that. And Leonetti nailed that. You know,
I think
really,
they
really
pulled
good.
A lot of good things off with it.
You
know, I just sit here and I'm thinking about Death Wish that Joe's going to do, and I'm just like, I don't know how they... Death Sentence, like, I just don't know what more you could have done differently. I just thought... what was the problem? Was there a problem in it for you? Was there, like, one major thing, or do you just think it just didn't click with audiences? Maybe bad timing, or...
You know, marketing, timing.
Yeah.
I mean, these things can go either way.
Yeah.
And also... Not to. I mean, this may be unfair to say, but you know, on The Gray, you know, we're able to pull the money together, do the thing before any distributor, any studio is involved.
Yeah.
When you have a distributor involved, they start voicing their opinion at various stages.
Yeah.
And also, you may not have a guarantee about how many screens you're going to see.
Yeah.
So they start exerting a not so subtle pressure about how the film should evolve.
Or else they're going to take away
and then,
some screens.
And then, you say, okay, do it your way, and you're getting 5 screens. And thank God we were not in that situation on The Gray, and I think it's why it has the It has the unusual shape that does. And maybe that was a factor in Death Sentence. I don't know. I mean, I think James ultimately really made and released the movie he wanted.
That was good.
And you know, a lot of it is just, you know, how does a critic, how's it marketed? You know, it was marketed in a way... They kind of were pushing anti-violence. I mean, somebody had the genius idea of pushing it as an anti-violence film. We were saying, guys, it's not going to be, you know, no one's going to buy that. Don't do that. And that actually raised the ire of a lot of critics, and it became the kind of the drumbeat of critics saying, this is not an anti-violence film. At which point I was saying, I know, I never said it was. Some publicist, I don't want to point any fingers at any one particular person, but you know, that film. Maybe a slightly different cut, or maybe just exactly the way it's cut, may have come out and worked. And just it's a lot of times it's timing, and it did not get. I mean, you got to get the movie in front of people. And Open Road, you know, my God,
they did a great job.
They committed the hell out of pushing The Gray, and
they did a great job.
And they managed to feed it out to critics in a way that was maybe gradual enough that let some good ones get in the mix, and then that kind of took hold. So they ran a genius campaign.
Let me ask you, what happened with this Castlevania script that everyone...
How did you hear about Castlevania?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you know about that
I
one?
Heard you were doing an adaptation of the video game Castlevania.
Yeah, we did. I've done many, many adaptations. And how I got involved with that, I don't know. I don't remember. But
it paid the bill.
Yeah, it did. I did multiple versions of that. And
ever going to see the light of day?
One day with a different crew of people, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm not really a video game guy at all. I played the game in its really rudimentary form, and it was something that came at me, and it was appealing. It was going to pay some bills. It was appealing from that point of view, but also it was appealing because it was just completely alien to anything I'd ever tried to write. I'd never tried to do anything like that. Sort of a little, not exactly light, but a little bit not based in gritty reality. And all the stuff I'm doing for myself, Mad Dog is the thing I want to direct for myself. It's all like right on the track with the gray. That's where I live. You know, it better feel real or I get very nervous. But to do something that was just completely... a different universe was, that was kind of appealing. And the guy, when I first was involved, it was Rogues, Andrew Rona, and Alex Heineman, two extremely insightful, groovy, smart producers, executives, and they had a really good handle on it. And they had Sylvain White, who made one film called The Losers, which wasn't received so well, but had
really
stomped the yard. Previously, and they sent me Stomp the Yard. They told me about Sylvain. He hadn't made The Losers yet. And they sent me Stomp the Yard. And I watched this thing, and I called him. I think I probably had the first coffee meeting with him, first, and I hadn't actually seen the thing. But I saw the thing, and I said, I think I'd rather stick needles in my eyes than watch a dance movie. But somehow, that was a very engaging, he cut it incredibly well. He shot it incredibly well. He cut it incredibly well. He caught the sort of, it's a fairly slight story, but he told a great story. I think Sylvain's a great director, and the Losers
Jeffrey Dean Morgan killed it in The Losers.
Yeah, he's great.
In it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great movie. But anyway, Sylvain and I, we jumped in together from the get-go, on Castlevania, and Sylvain's visual imagination have you read the script? Have you seen it?
For Castlevania?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, his visual imagination is
I heard about
ridiculous.
It, and I'm like, what?
It's ridiculous. He's one of them. And my grandfather was a painter. My dad was, after he was a commando, became a photographer. Interesting. That's normally what you do, right?
Yeah.
You become a commando, then you become a photographer. But, I care about visual things. And, I made my first films when I was 8 years old, and cutting things with his old Bolexes and stuff. So, I mean, I care visually. And Sylvain, I think, is of the guys I worked with, one of the most visually inventive dudes. And we had a ball. I mean, the script we originally did on that was just a blast. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
It wasn't intended to be hilarious, but it was just hilarious adventure. And we had a.
I think that movie could work. I'm shocked that it's. I'm shocked that the project's not going.
There were various many voices.
That
many voices in that one.
It sounds like a big studio film.
It was the strike hit it. The strike killed it.
It was during that.
I handed in my first draft midnight. It was if I'd gone another minute.
Strike.
I literally handed it in, but a minute later it would have been an illegal draft. I literally. Gave them my last draft at 11:59 or whatever, and then I wasn't legally allowed to do anything beyond that to develop it for actors or anything. So the studio it was Rogue and Universal. They could have greenlit it, but they would have been greenlighting
strike
what I was told.
So much.
It was a $60 million first draft.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm the world's greatest writer. And my first draft of anything is ready to shoot the next morning.
Yeah.
But I can understand that for $60 million, they were timid. They wanted to wait. They waited to strike out, and then other pieces of whatever it was, other pieces of financing partnership didn't. And then that's during that waiting period, other voices began to creep in. Like, well, I don't know if Sylvain's take is really the take. But to me, it was. I mean, I love Sylvain's a great dude. And that was a fun version, and I dug that version. Then it went to sleep for a while, I think some other people kicked it around. And then I got a call literally 3 years later that James Wan is doing it.
Doing the Castlevania.
Yeah, he's doing Castlevania. Do I want to write another version? And it's like, okay, cool, I'll just come in and we'll update it. Great, we'll go. But James, being James, he doesn't want to do Sylvan's version. He wants to do James' version. So James had a completely different version. And
you wanted to do a totally different movie.
Well, you know, it was just, it was like, I'm going to, wait, it's bad enough to rewrite yourself, but to rewrite yourself and do something that's just got nothing to do with the first thing you did, it was sort of a strange experience. And then, but that said, James' take was also great, and I love James. We had a blast doing that one. But then in that, it had fallen out of Universal, fallen out of Rogue, and by that point it fell into a legal nightmare that had nothing to do with James or me. And had everything to do with where the producers were on the rights and the guild. It just got into a situation where literally my lawyers and the guild made me stop working on it. Yeah, which was another fun situation.
They killed a lot of projects.
Castlevania's cursed. Every time I started getting that movie going somewhere, someone legally told me, you know, someone in a legal voice told me to stop working on it. So, but I had a blast with both those guys.
That's great.
Two versions are totally different. So
you think your next thing for sure is going to be this McGee project?
Yeah, I hope
which
so.
You're calling Junior right now?
Well, Junior Johnson. Yeah,
Junior Johnson, yeah.
And then the thing for myself, probably Mad Dog because it's a little more commercial.
Yeah.
That said, maybe Crack in the Ground because it's cheaper. I mean, I can get... I don't see Liam doing it. I'd love him. But if a guy at Liam's level or a guy at Kevin's level... we're willing. If Kevin cared to do it and wanted to carve out the not very many days we would need to shoot it, we could shoot it for nothing, you know. And I, what we would need to raise to make that movie, I can raise with Kevin. So if Kevin's crazy enough to want to do it with me, then we may do that one. But you know, as I'm saying, if my agent listened to this, she's like, "Do not make that movie. That movie is not commercial." And, you know, like it was, for my first directing outing, they would rather. The people who care about me would rather I do something more supposedly commercial. But you couldn't put that any nicer of a way.
The people who care about me. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You can't. But if you think that way, you put yourself in a box and you end up with crap. You know, it's like walking in a room and pitching something and you're telling people what you think they want to hear.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe you win that way, but...
Well, the truth is, too, sometimes you write, you know, as a writer, I've written things that are very commercial, and I've written things that aren't, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You can't train yourself, okay, I got to make everything I do this way, commercial, marketable, or else it'll suck.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be no good.
Yeah, you really can't. And also, the longer I do it, the less I... But when I was just starting, there was more of a kind of a... You know, well, just for a workout, I'll try something completely different, or I'll do it the way they want to do it. And I've been asked to look at things that are probably the last thing on earth I would ever look at. I mean, I've probably been sent 15 alien invasion movies. I've been sent dozens of after Castlevania. I got a lot of vampire movies. I don't care about that stuff. You know, that's not what my mom didn't raise me to do that.
Is it easy to turn down stuff though when you know? Because especially we know. I know a lot of writers, like John Sayles even, for instance, does a lot of ghostwriting, if you will.
But he writes on what he wants to write. You know, he doesn't.
But he also does his own stuff. Yeah, so how do you balance that? Is it easy to turn down things?
Yeah, it's surprisingly easy. It really is. Yeah. Because,
even though there's good money, it's easy.
Yeah. Well, there may be good money. You know, you're not. It's not like someone standing there saying, "I will give you so much money." You know.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, well, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. No, it's been, I've turned down, I mean, well, I probably shouldn't say that. Nobody's listening now, right? This is over.
Well, it's over time. People, right. Yes, yeah.
No, I passed on, I don't care. I passed on Underworld 4. You know, they tell me that. And I, you know, and look, I think those movies are great. I actually enjoy them, you know, for what that is.
Sure.
I enjoy them. And I just said, there's
it's not your
it took
cup
me
of
10
tea.
Seconds to pass. I said, there's no way in hell that number 4 is gonna mean anything to me that I give a crap about and or be any good, you know? And it was funny though because it opened the weekend before The Gray and it did 25 million and I was laughing because I was like, well, if I'd done, you would have had back to back
hits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. But you know. Now, people say to you, "You're doing it."
But when it's a movie like that, when it's a big studio picture, and it's not, obviously it could be because you don't like it, but it could also be just because it's not your thing or whatever,
and you're not into it.
But whatever the deal is, it's not insulting. But do studios, they offer you a amount to rewrite something, and then
you have what's called a quote,
and you get
a fraction of your quote, and these days people don't get their quote.
Although
I'm lucky because my quote's $5 an hour. So I could work every day if I want to. But
I could afford the
strike. A lot of people were really hurt. Writers were hurting after people were doing things for half their quote, a quarter of their quote. And I'm not going to say that studios took advantage of it and jammed a lot of people, but the studios took advantage of it and jammed a lot of people. And they did.
Are they doing better now, you think?
It creeps up, but you look at, there was an election for the Guild not that long
You're
ago.
Right.
And David Goyer put up on his website, and David Goyer is doing fine. And one of his major issues was how many free rewrites he's asked to do. And his quote is, his quote's fine.
Yeah.
But they'll still make him write the thing five times and pay him once. And that's more prevalent now than it used to be. But that's the game, and but for me, for whatever reason, my quote jumped after the strike, and I haven't really figured out why. And I've been lucky to get it.
Good.
I'm sure it just jumped again. Let's hope so.
Yeah.
My phone's burning. It's burning. It's on fire. I met Gilroy once. Only one time.
Yeah, Tony Gilroy.
The whole Bourne franchise.
Oh, yeah, all the Bourne movies.
Great director, Michael Clayton. And I met him only once, and actually was at,
love Michael Clayton.
It was at a screening, another screening with, very few people. And my wife, Jenny, we were expecting our first, and, somebody said, Ian's going to be at that. And Gilroy goes, are you writing your ass off yet? I was like, yeah, I am writing my ass off. That's strange. And, he said when his girlfriend at the time, I'm not sure if they were married. I can't remember what he said. But, anyway, when he got his wife or girlfriend pregnant, he just said, I was burning it. I was writing like crazy. He went nuts. But anyway, he was saying that.
Got paid for college.
Yeah, exactly. But he sits in a room. He's got a joint. He used to have a joint up the street from my wife's. My wife and I, our apartment in New York. And, I think Gavin said, so how's it going? And Tony goes, I think he had done one of the Bournes by then already. And he goes, it's going pretty good. I sit in the room. Sometimes the phone rings. It's okay, And then, sometimes the phone rings.
Sometimes the phone rings.
No, it has been. I have to admit aside from enjoying the way the movie came, the way the movie shaped up.
Yeah.
And but then the way it opened, and the critical reception has all been very nice. It does feel a little different, and it's going to feel a little different for about three more days.
Yeah.
And then it's back to what it was. I'm going to try and push it.
But McGee's a really smart guy.
Yes, he is.
If your next project's with McGee, it could be another hit.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't make a lot that aren't.
Well, yeah, he kind of knows what he's doing. This particular movie is, the NASCAR
sounds really good.
I think it'll be great. So
that's great. Well, let's promote once again The Grey, of course, is in theaters now, which is I don't even know. This movie's great.
Thank you,
man. I've seen it twice now.
Thank you, Joe.
I wish Liam knew who I was. He could thank me.
Who's that guy who's interviewing everybody? What's his fucking game? What's he want? What's he fucking want?
Obviously, we didn't even bother trying to get Liam.
I'm sure you can get everybody else on the production. Liam is an amazing dude.
I've been thinking about it. I've now had time to think about it since Frank and Joe have been on.
Yeah.
It's better than any movie I saw last year, too.
Wow, thank you.
So it's not even just the best movie I've seen this year. I've gone through a lot more now. The only thing I haven't seen is The Separation, which I hear is great, but it's the best movie
I've seen
in a year.
Thank you. Thanks so much for saying
that. I think it's great. I really do. People need to see it.
It only took 200 people 7 years to to make it. So.
And it's worth it.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
worth it. It yeah. paid off yeah. because I and look, Joe's the it boy now. Everyone wants to yep. work with Joe yep. now. He's probably
and
I
Frank,
remember
and Frank and Liam and James Batchett and Dermot.
I know. Oh yeah, and yeah. Frank, he's got 50 projects yep. going on. Yep. It was funny because after I interviewed Joe, we were talking and we're bullshitting out. And he asked me about my writing, and he goes, "Oh, I love that idea. You should send me the script." I go, "I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
I still did, but I'm not gonna. I'm thinking to myself, all right, now I don't want Joe's movie to make any money. So I'm the only script he gets next week.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, this thing. And I looked at Joe, and I go, this thing's gonna make 20 mil this
yeah,
week.
Yeah.
And he goes, no.
You were right.
Yeah. I go, trust me, and yeah. you're not going to read my script until yeah. like 7 months from
yeah,
now when you
yeah.
find it at the bottom of your email pile.
Well, you know, you might read it eventually.
But I knew this would be huge.
Yeah.
I knew
you,
things were going to just explode for it.
Yeah.
You can't make great films like this and people not
yeah.
find them.
Well, it's a miracle that it got made the way it is and that it can.
Open Road did a great
and,
job.
Yeah, it's been a good thing.
That company made a great first impression on
yeah.
how to tell
yeah,
you.
On everybody. I think that's what they were setting out to do. And,
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that they took a movie like this and just
yeah.
put it out there, man,
yeah.
for everybody.
And they had not seen the whole film.
Oh, that's
no, they,
wild.
They bet on it. They bet on it. I can't remember how long. I can't
it's
remember
a good
it
bet.
10 minutes or 30 minutes, but it was. They saw a piece. And they bet on it, and they, you know.
See, that's why Joe's great, though,
yeah.
because I know a lot of stories where producers bet on the director, and they even edited the movie, the
yeah.
director, and,
yeah.
and they were garbage.
Yeah.
And Joe wanted everything to be perfect.
Yeah.
And that they made a good bet there.
Yeah.
And
he did.
Yeah, I think that's great, and I'm really happy
for you
that things are.
Thank you, and thanks for everything. You've been a great.
Dude, it's not a problem at all.
And with the book too, we really, you know.
My producer hates when I say this, but I do the show for free, so it's because I love it. It's because I love it, or else you know.
90% of the time.
Or else I'm taking any asshole on this show.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me on, and you know, again, your support.
And you guys should do a comedy, something really manly and funny.
One day, Joe and I did. We sort of trailed each other.
Because you guys are all funny. So do something.
Yeah,
well, I don't see. Here's the thing about really manly men like you guys.
Yeah.
I don't.
Or maybe Joe and Leah. Remember.
Oh, I don't think you guys always understand that you're funny.
Well, Joe, I said that to Joe. I actually was saying because I knew Joe from Blood and Guts and you know and then Narc, which I read you know early on before he got it made. And but no, I had the same reaction to it. I said, "Dude, you're funny. You should make a comedy." And I actually bugged him about it. And then he does Smoking Aces and A-Team, which were great. But like, I think Joe lives personally. I think he lives somewhere else, which isn't to say he couldn't make a comedy work. I think he's got one, and he'll probably kill it if he finds the. But you have to find the connection to it, and I don't dare. I mean,
you guys are going to have gray hair and white hair like
me,
though,
yeah.
if you keep making these ultra-manly
films. I want to make a kids movie.
Do an Eddie Murphy movie already,
all
right?
I want to make a Disney movie.
Norbit,
be
too.
Sort of a Tim Burton, like, creepy Disney movie.
Before we go, and I promo all of Ian's stuff one more time, I did want to, I got a tip in, and this is very close to happening, so if you're listening to the show, you're going to be the first to hear this, probably. John Goodman is this close to signing on to do Roseanne's sitcom, which would reunite him and Roseanne.
That's insane.
So there you go. It's a very reliable source of mine.
He was in Death Sentence.
Yeah,
and
he was in Death. He was great in Death Sentence.
And I haven't seen
him as the crazy gun guy.
At least Kevin still talks to me.
Oh, John won't even.
As these things go, I actually just didn't. The days I was there, he wasn't there, so I never.
He was great in the movie, though.
He's great.
He can play a character, man. He's great.
Yeah.
So once again, see the gray.
Please go see the gray.
Ian's on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
@IanJeffers1.
@IanJeffers1.
And if you're crazy enough that you want to punish yourself more and read the book, find out what happens in the end.
Yeah,
it's on Amazon. It's going to be on. Well, I've gone.
Can you get on your Kindle too?
I've gone into like auto plug mode. That's kind of scary.
No, it's okay.
Wow, I just
you get used to it after a while on this show.
But yeah, it's on Amazon on pre-order, and in theory, it's going to be actually gettable in a week, and it'll be up on Nook and on and Barnes and Noble and on
Nook is the
Apple.
Barnes and Noble application thing. Their iPad thing.
Yeah. And right now, it's we're starting with an electronic, and we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes from there. Anyway,
very good. And Chucky, I told you, have fun at Megadeth and who else is he seeing tonight? Megadeth and Motorhead, have fun.
Oh, Motorhead. Right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Ian. Thank you, man. I'm so happy you could do this. I'd love to have you on anytime you want, man.
I'll come back.
You're a good dude, man. Good dude.
We'll do Death Sentence to Comedy.
Let's do it. I'm in. John Goodman may not come back. I'll do the John Goodman. He's shrunk. And lost hair. All right. Thank you very much.
We'll see
you next week, Wednesday and Thursday.
All right.